Welcome to the February 7th, 2024 meeting of the Board of Supervisors. We'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First, we have an adoption of the agenda.
Any changes?
Yes, we do. Mr. Chair, members of the board, so there was a request to add two items. One is a resolution opposing Senate Bill 697. And what was the title of that again?
Folks telling us, we can say what we want, but it doesn't matter because they're going to tell us what they're going to do.
I think he got the point last night.
It's just resolution to oppose Senate Bill 697, Senator Schuyler and Falkenberg.
Okay. This is regarding solar in our county. And then the second item is a quick one. It's an amendment to the budget calendar regarding the school's presentation to the county. Budget presentation to the county.
So do you not go into that now, saying what those changes are? Or?
No, I mean, we can just talk about it under new business, both of those items.
Okay.
So those are the only two items I have to add.
Okay. And county administrator's report?
Yep.
All right, hold on. I'd like to make a motion to adopt the agenda. Changes so made.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Sheridan, seconded by Mr. Hodge. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Chair votes aye. 5-0.
All right. County Administrator's report. Just have a few things to report. So one, happy belated birthday to Mr. Hodge. We're not going to ask how old, but I understand it was February 3rd, so happy belated.
He's playing catch up.
It's more than 55.
It is.
And there's others here that are more than 55, so careful now.
And then there's others that look a lot older.
Well, the beard helped you, Tony.
I'll hold mine.
One went out to a new employee. It started in the communications in E911 communications department. Communications officer Brittany Baxter. She started February 5th. I'd like to welcome her aboard. In the United States, up to 19% of teens experience sexual or physical dating violence. About half face stalking harassment, and as many as 65% report being physically abused. Again, signs of teen dating violence can include telling a partner who they cannot hang out with on social media, looking through messages on a partner's phone without permission, inconsistent school attendance, sudden requests to change a class schedule, constant worrying about making a partner angry, joking about a partner's violent behavior or temper. Talk to your teens about healthy, safe relationships. For more information on teen dating violence and resources, you can visit those sites. Again, the Fluvanna Victim Witness Assistance Program could certainly provide more information at 434-591-1985. And then just real quick, some upcoming meeting dates. Again, we're going to discuss the February 21st meeting date, as I said, about the school's adopted budget presentation. We're still going to have a work session on February 21st, but there's some flip-flops potentially with that I'd like to discuss with the board at the school's request. And then February 21st at 7 p.m., we have a regular meeting. And then February 28th at 7 p.m., we have a BOS budget work session, county agency briefs. And actually, this should say county agency briefs and constitutional officers. And I think that's supposed to be in the, Caitlin, in the Morris room, I believe.
Yes.
It was the 29th. You're right. It should be 29th.
That you've got firefighter one.
I'll update it. I'm sorry.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. That's all I have.
Okay, we'll go into our first round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct to the board. Anyone wishing to address the board at this time?
My name is Patricia Pierce Block. I live at 103 Island Hill Road in Palmyra. And the Board of Supervisors, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about the Pleasant Grove Park proposal relative to the off-leash code and restrictions. I very much appreciate the time and effort that the Board of Supervisors, Mr. Aaron Switzer, Spitzer, excuse me, my apologies, and Mr. Eric Dahl have given to helping ensure this important county park offer dogs the opportunity to work off-leash while protecting citizens and visitors from pets that might engage in mischievous behavior when off-leash. My opinion, I did look at the map that was included in all the material that you published for this meeting, and my opinion of the proposed map is that it offers a good balance of on and off-leash areas, both in terms of the extent. There are approximately 9 miles of trail access, topographical variety of park trails, and open space for off-leash activities, or approximately 6 acres of open space. I understand from Mr. Spitzer that signage will be positioned at the head of the off-leash trails so that visitors and owners of dogs will have clear guidance as to where dogs can be off-leash and what the park expectations are, and that visitors are likewise made aware of this fact. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on both the proposed original and the modified map that's in the material that will be covered tonight, and I look forward to spending time at the park throughout the years to come and appreciate the county's commitment to keeping our parks safe and enjoyable for all of our visitors. So thank you. If I may digress a little, I did want to also comment on your proposed resolution to opposing House Bill 800 and Senate Bill 713, which shifts make-ready costs for broadband to the electric cooperatives. I very much appreciate you taking that position. We have a wonderful electric cooperative, the Central Virginia Electric Cooperative, and they do a great job of trying to control costs for us and allowing for-profit companies who are already tremendously benefiting from the federal monies that have been awarded to promote broadband throughout the country, and expecting a nonprofit to incur any costs related to their promotion of broadband is absolutely inappropriate. So I appreciate you taking that position, and I was hoping that you, when you discuss this particular item as part of your agenda, that you explain how the county's concern about this bill translates to something at the state level. Is there what kind of communication occurs to ensure that our state representatives know that the county has taken this position? I'm new to the state of Virginia, and I don't totally understand the way this information is translated and passed along to.
Maybe we could discuss it in a new business? Or?
We will present on the matter. Yeah. I'll go over how that process works.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I wanted to say to you, I was there last night at the House subcommittees and ended up not having to talk, but had some stuff scripted. And I kept thinking of how you present here, and you're a role model for how to win friends and influence people. I respect the way you come up to the board.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your kind words. Okay, have a good evening.
Anybody else? Seeing no one wishing to speak, we will close the first round of public comments. Appointments?
Oh, yeah, Mr. Chair, we've got an appointment for the Jefferson Board of Aging Advisory Council Citizen Representative. We have two appointees, Allison Pace and Mr. Christopher Baca, Sr. I know I saw Mr. Baca. There we go. I know I saw Mr. Baca here, and I don't, and then I see Ms. Pace here as well. So if you want to have each one of them come up and kind of discuss their desire for the appointment, you can certainly do that.
Okay. I guess let's do it in. Allison, would you like to come up?
Good evening. My name is Allison Pace, and I am with Luvanna County Department of Social Services. And we partner with JAVA. I'm the Adult Services Supervisor with the agency. And we have a partnership with JAVA. We refer our clients to them. And I feel as though it would be beneficial for me to be on their advisory committee. And able to learn the resources that they're providing to our community and being able to link our families that are in need with services.
Thank you.
Mr.
Baca?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm Chris Baca, and I live at 40 Turkey Sag Trail. I appreciate your consideration for this position and any other committee position to represent you. I'm looking forward to extending the service that I can offer to the community, to the county, and look forward to learning more about JAVA. I have to admit, I read through the JAVA description a couple weeks ago, so it's not really fresh, but I look forward to jumping in if you so desire. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker.
And again, Mr. Chair, I can pull up both the applications if you want. Again, they're in the board package, so.
Okay, we're open for discussion.
I've known Mr. Baca personally and think he's wonderful and great, but I have to admit that it's kind of hard to argue against Mrs. Pace's role with the county and how she might fit with coordinating services together in a more comprehensive way. So. Chris, I'm sorry, but
once again, it's nice to have overqualified people, or greatly qualified people, and multiple of that. Because I can remember sitting up here a long time ago, and we did not have that. Say, Ms. Pace has been on the board, has she?
No.
She just worked for social services. Yep.
All right, anybody want to make a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board commission or committee appointment. Ms. Allison Pace to serve on the Jefferson Area Board of Aging Advisory Council Citizen Representative, term beginning February the 2nd, 2024, ending June 30th, 2025.
Second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. Goad. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye.
Don't give up.
No. we're going to get you in a good place.
I mean, it truly is great to have as many good applicants as we're getting. Because I can remember being on the telephone calling people up saying, hey, we need somebody to fill this role. Come on.
All right. Presentations. We'll move to presentations. Tab B. Presenter for Blue Ridge Health Department.
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. My name is Ryan McKay. I am the newly appointed director of the Blue Ridge Health District as of late December. I think it's safe to say this is in some ways a reintroduction to the health department. It's been a few years since we've presented other than at a budget meeting. So I appreciate the opportunity to provide some background on where we are, where we're headed, and some highlights from FY 2023. Next slide, please. So our health district is comprised of six localities, Charlottesville, Albemarle, Greene, Louisa, Nelson and Fluvanna County. We have health department locations located in five of our localities. Charlottesville and Albemarle is co-located together. And we have dedicated staff that I'll go through specific to Fluvanna County. Next slide, please. So this quote here really encompasses what we are trying to do with public health. I won't read the quote, but I'll explain more about my role as health director. I really view this as community health strategist. How do I and our team convene individuals to identify health gaps in the community, broader health gaps, not necessarily sort of the primary acute care, but much more broad to support the community to protect health and well-being. And we really identify ways, whether that's through the health department or through an extensive network of partners we have, to make sure those gaps are filled. We work with a number of local communities who have sort of the same set of people they serve, similar missions in supporting the community, and really view my role as sort of convening all of those organizations to make sure that we're identifying those gaps, meeting people where they are, providing the services needed specific to a locality. Next slide. So at the bottom of this graphic, you sort of see the core functions, what we're accustomed to, thinking about communicable diseases, environmental health, the clinical services that we provide, how we connect individuals from what they need and where they are to the services that are really most critical to their health and well-being. Behind that is a larger infrastructure that supports that, emergency preparedness and response, the administrative functions that make sure we're managing our funds soundly, taking care of taxpayer dollars, thinking through quality improvement and quality assurance, that we're addressing things under policy and code, but also doing that effectively and efficiently. So there is a pretty broad network of individuals that work behind the scenes to make sure that individuals who work on the front lines, our nurses, our environmental health staff, have the support and resources they need to be able to provide for the communities that we serve. Next slide. Here is sort of the organizational chart of where we are as a health district. For a little bit of background, traditionally, and set by the Code of Virginia, health directors had to be a physician. 2 years ago, the General Assembly passed a bill that allowed non-physicians to become health directors. This was largely to fill what really had been a staffing gap within those positions. As early as a year ago, there are roughly 10 or 11 vacant health director positions out of 31 to 35 across Virginia. I am the first non-physician to serve for the Blue Ridge Health District. I have been here for 10 years, so I have a very sound knowledge of our communities. And in fact, one of my strongest relationships is with Fluvanna County, as I've been attending department meetings on a monthly basis for I think about a solid 3 to 4 years. We do have a medical consultant, which is part of that bill. We're required to have a physician on staff. This medical consultant is a former health director in the Three Rivers Health District. He has served with BDH for approximately 7 to 8 years. His role is truly that of consultant, providing support for our clinicians on decision-making, reviewing charts as needed, but then also signing off on things like standing orders where we may be distributing different medications, asthma medicine, things like that, to the community partners. He also signs off on documentation. For example, we partner with social services to do pre-screenings for individuals seeking care, oftentimes in assisted living, and so he signs off and reviews those. The staff below, aside from me in an acting position, have a combined 55 years of public health experience with the Blue Ridge Health District alone. So we have a solid staff who is very familiar with our communities, have worked closely with our local community partners and government partners, and have a wealth of knowledge to provide the support that's needed for our community. Next slide. Here we have our current dedicated staff of 7 individuals who work in environmental health, clinical services, community outreach. We have 41 individuals who in some way provide support to Fluvanna County. So there's the administrative component, but there are also individuals who support our clinical operations, our environmental health operations. So while we may be a little bit short-staffed on the clinical side, we use a mix of contractors and other full-time equivalent employees to provide that direct support that's needed. On environmental health, we have experts on well and sewage systems who comes out and provides dedicated support, as well as a food services supervisor who's our technical expert when it comes to restaurants. Next slide. Here we have a list of our traditional services, things like vital records where individuals can access birth certificates, marriage certificates, death certificates, which are very traditional. On our environmental health, obviously septic systems, private permits, food servicing for restaurants, temporary events. We do have a harm reduction campaign and staff that works on distributing and training individuals to use naloxone, fentanyl test strips, medication disposal bags, and then have HIV and Hep C testing for those who are at risk. Our population health team, this is really kind of where public health is going, being out in the community, meeting people where they are, and really connecting individuals to the services that they need, whether that's here with the health department, potentially through social services, or for local community partners who are trying to provide different sorts of assistance. Upcoming is our Map to Health campaign. So this is where we go through a community health assessment. We meet with dozens of community partners to identify those core things that we need to focus on, a couple of key things, and really exemplifies what we try to do in public health is, what are the gaps and how do we get people to it? So transportation has been a huge thing across our district. While we're not responsible for transportation, our goal is to bring the right people to the table to make sure that it can be provided. Next slide. Some additional services here. This is more specific to the clinical, so the much more traditional immunizations that we offer. This is largely our back to school campaign for vaccines that are required for school-aged children. Obviously, we provided a lot of access to COVID vaccine, but now we're getting back into more of our traditional role, flu vaccine and similar vaccines that we've put up more traditionally. Some other of our services, we have a very large WIC clientele. We're in the county at least twice a month. It expanded greatly during the COVID pandemic. As resources were expanded, access was expanded, and so we're trying to really maintain those services to individuals. Next slide. Just to kind of give you a tale of where we've been and where we're heading. So pre-pandemic, we were on a pretty sharp trajectory to provide clinical services in different areas, TB testing, immunizations, family planning. And obviously during COVID, we had to divert all of our resources primarily to the COVID response. Over the last couple of years, I'm excited to say we are on our way back. Our immunizations have picked up to the point where they're the highest they've been since pre-COVID. And our overall clinical services are reaching near what we saw in 2019, all with a little bit of short staffing. So I'm excited about where we're heading. We have some great opportunities to continue that effort and looking forward to what we see in this current fiscal year. Next slide. Just some other highlights, some key points. Keep in mind our environmental health staff is a person of one with some support of where we are in the district. So some of those on-site technical experts. Jason Fulton, our EH specialist here in Fluvanna, is repeatedly praised in our department meetings for his efforts, whether it's restaurants, wells, sewage and septic inspections. But he does a great job and our staff do a great job to provide the resources that the county needs. Next slide. And then just some additional data. We continue to provide access to different vaccines. Obviously, COVID is a highlight. But I do want to recognize one key piece here. So we do offer free car seats and cribs to those who are in need. And that's through our community health worker program and maternal child health. We do this fairly often. We also provide training for individuals who need that, particularly on the safe sleep side, and then also with our car seats and installations. So it's been a great connection to have our community health worker out in the community working with individuals to provide access to those resources. Next slide. And with that, I just want to thank you again. It's an honor to be in this role. I'm looking forward to continuing our work here in Fluvanna County and with the Health District, and certainly would welcome any questions if you have them.
Any questions?
Don't have any. I work for the county, so I worked with a lot of your health people, and I can say they're good staff.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And again, I've worked along with Ryan for a while. Like I said, he's been great to work along, and they picked a good individual.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll move on to action matters. Tab C. Mr. Scarpignato and Mrs. Shackelford.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Curtis Carpignano. I'm a planner with the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, the TJPDC, and I'm excited to be here today to talk with you all about the Comprehensive Safety Action Plan that the TJPDC is developing in partnership with our jurisdictions, including Savannah County. And I'm joined by my colleague, Sandy Shackelford, here today. And my goal for this evening is to share some brief background about the Safe Streets and Roads for All grant program and to seek a resolution of support from Savannah County to support efforts to reduce roadway-related fatalities and serious injuries. Next slide. So Safe Streets and Roads for All, SS4A, what is that? That is a grant established with the passage of the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law in 2021 with the intent of finding ways to reduce deaths and serious injuries on the roadways. So there's funding available through two pots. There's planning money and then there's implementation money. Planning money is where we are currently. The TJPDC applied for funding to develop the Comprehensive Safety Action Plan. And that's important because once you have an eligible plan, you can then apply to receive project implementation funding through SS4A. So that's a new pot of money that through this plan, you'll be able to leverage to fund new projects in the future. And I'll also note that Savannah County did commit funding towards this planning process. And although the plan is being managed regionally by the TJPDC, we want this to be a locally driven plan. So we want our priority countermeasures to align with your county's needs and desires. And we'll work with your staff to ensure that. Next slide. So this slide just overviews some of the general benefits of a comprehensive safety action plan. Our goal is to use the planning process to identify implementation projects that will improve roadway safety for all types of users. Now, these will include infrastructure improvements, engineering improvements, roadway design, all of that, but we'll also consider opportunities that range from traffic safety enforcement to emergency services to education. And another hope for us out of this plan is that we'll be able to provide you all with a pipeline of projects that you can seek funding for through various funding mechanisms in addition to Smart Scale. So that could include those implementation funds I mentioned earlier, but it could also include a variety of other funding mechanisms like some of the ones we have listed on the slide here. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the required components of a comprehensive safety action plan. And a leadership commitment is one of those required components. And it's a commitment to supporting the reduction of deaths and serious injuries on the roadways in order to meet the eligibility requirements that would render you all eligible to apply for implementation funding in the future. The plan is also required to be data-driven and incorporate a robust public engagement process with special emphasis on an inclusive and representative process in the plan's development. So the TJPDC plans to use its established transportation programs to provide ongoing oversight, monitoring, and fulfill reporting requirements necessary for the grant. The main reason we are here tonight, though, is to seek the leadership commitment from you all to reduce deaths and serious injuries on the roads in Savannah County. And that, again, is the first slide there, the first box. Next slide. This is just some context for you all about some of the roadway-related crashes in Savannah County. So as you can see, there were 108 roadway-related serious injuries or fatalities in Savannah County over the most recent 5 years of available data from 2018 to 2022. And I just want to highlight that the commitment that you all need to agree to in order to receive this funding later on and be eligible requires a goal and timeline for eliminating roadway fatalities and serious injuries, which may be achieved through a significant percentage reduction goal with a specific date in mind, with an eventual goal of actual elimination of roadway deaths and fatalities, or roadway deaths and serious injuries. Next slide. So after discussing this requirement with Savannah County staff and with the understanding that the roadways in Savannah County are mostly maintained by the state, by the Virginia Department of Transportation, we are recommending that we go with a commitment to a 50% reduction in deaths and serious injuries by 2045 which is the same as the commitment outlined by the state in Virginia's Strategic Highway Safety Plan, with the goal of eventually achieving zero deaths and injuries on the roadways. So this resolution of commitment also commits Fluvanna County to actively participating in this planning process and committing to prioritizing the recommendations that are developed as part of the planning process. And those recommendations will be developed with the county staff, with you all, so that you all are comfortable with the recommendations that come out and they align with the needs of your jurisdiction. And with that, we are asking you all to approve the resolution of commitment in your meeting packets, and I'm happy to take any questions.
I got one. Where are we at currently with the plan?
Very early on at the moment. We are going to be entering public engagement in the coming months. I would describe us as just in the early stages. If you remember that, I don't remember which slide it was, earlier on. Yeah, that one there.
You got to complete the blocks.
Yeah, basically. So we're kind of on that first step currently with the leadership commitment.
Do you have a target for that?
For the leadership commitment?
No, a target for completing the plan.
Yes. The plan is to have the plan completed by the summer of 2025.
So 18 months. Okay, and then my next question is, where you were talking about, who are you asking, and you said it's robust public engagement, so will that involve the five of us up here? Because many times I've seen people come before the board, whether it's VDOT, and we rattle off instances that we know of firsthand as bus drivers or first responders where there's incidents on the road in the county here.
Well, we certainly would love to have your feedback, but we are intending to go out into the public through pop-up events that we will locate with coordination with your county staff. And we'll also have community champions who are meant to be people in the community that have connections to members of Fluvanna County, communities that aren't necessarily reached out to usually in most planning processes. So we have a robust planning process here that will include public engagement in a variety of realms. Not just you all, but you all are more than welcome and encouraged to provide your feedback as we do this.
Okay.
I will tell you, the state of Virginia started requiring a year ago that all kids, when they get their green card, before they get their license, have to attend a 90-minute or watch a 90-minute video. We started doing that. Sheriff, what about, is he back there?
No, he's back. Yeah, he's back there.
Yeah. Sheriff, we started doing that, what, about 8 years ago? The sheriff, a state trooper, and myself will speak to every 16-year-old getting a license. And, you know, I'm glad that our goal is zero until we find a cure for distractions, impatience. I'm sorry. We buried my niece 3 weeks ago.
Oh. That goal of zero is mandated as part of this, right?
Yes. The mandate is that you have a goal of eventually achieving zero. Right now we're proposing that the specific date just has a percent reduction, though. The zero goal doesn't need to have a specific date as long as you have an ambitious percentage reduction. But the zero does need to be in there.
And so for instance, in the 50%, it's 50% of what number?
Of the current number.
Okay. So of the total, or just as from a yearly amount?
Pull up the resolution.
It would most likely be gauged by the same methodology that is used.
Okay.
So you would have a sliding five-year average over time that you're working to reduce.
I can't imagine, it doesn't make a difference, so I don't want to prolong the meeting with it, but where in the world does it come from that we have a goal of completely eliminating traffic deaths? How in the world can somebody logically say that? I mean, we have to go back to horses, and even then people will fall off. I just don't know where that, only government would say something so illogical.
You have to have a goal for it, I guess.
It's kind of hard to say I have a goal of, you know, 10 people dying or something.
That would be at least logical. I mean, it's insanity, but it is what it is. We want it, and that's what we got to do to get it.
And I'd also like to just remind everybody, because this more is like, this is an attempt at a culture shift where we're viewing all deaths and injuries as unacceptable, and we're just committing to working to resolve those. So this isn't, regardless of the reality of how feasible any given number is, we want to set a culture here of we're going to work to try to address this and we're serious about it. So it's mostly that in my view, and that's I think the intent of the grant program, because this is a requirement coming from the grant program.
I would suggest y'all speak with the PE teachers at the high school and come when we talk, because that's what we addressed. We put 9 chairs on the table before we started doing this. That was how many teenagers we've lost. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to the question.
Sure.
I move the Board of Supervisors adopt a resolution of commitment to roadway safety goals as presented.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Hodge, seconded by Mr. Goad. All those who say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Now on item D, resolution designating off-leash trails, dog parks, and dog exercise areas. Mr. Whitman.
Yes, I'll start and then I'll hand it over to Aaron, who has a presentation. So basically, at our last meeting on the 17th, the board did adopt the ordinance, which would take effect 30 days after adoption, to basically prohibit dogs from running without a leash on county property. And this did exempt service dogs, law enforcement dogs, and then also dogs in county-approved off-leash events. And the fourth area is basically areas that are designated by resolution by the board as off-leash trails, dog parks, and dog exercise areas. So county staff has worked on a map showing the two different areas, eastern side and western side, and they bought both off of river access. Actually, I biked the western side last night, and those are really nice trails for dogs to run off-leash, especially the Burke Heights Loop. So I'll let Aaron take it over.
Oh, thank you for having me here again. So after our last meeting, we took some concerns, I think, that the board had and the citizens had into effect. And me and Mr. Dahl and Mr. Whitten, we kind of sat down before I met Ms. Bear's block and came up with this map to try to give more trail space to dogs and also have the open field space for dogs. We wanted to make sure, so basically, we almost gave half of our park. It's like 9 miles out of, and then 13 are restricted for leash. The middle are 13 miles. So it's 7 miles on the left, 13 miles in the middle, and 2 miles on the right of trails. So we almost split our park into half, basically, with trail uses. We just put them on the ends of the park and not in the middle, because a lot of our athletic stuff's in the middle. We have a disc golf course in the middle, too. So that's why we kind of put them on the edges and not in the middle.
And looked at some trails, too, that are maybe less poppy.
More?
Less walked.
A lot of trails in the middle, bike, you know, stuff like that. So we're just trying to kind of put it on the outskirts and have the middle of our park safe for leash dogs and people, is what we were looking at. And then after I showed Ms. Spears Black that, she appreciated the work we tried to do it. So I did meet with her. And this is just the trails that are going to be affected by each of the areas. We tried to lay it out so people know. I gave y'all a little flyer. If this is approved, that is what we will actually hand to citizens to educate them about. It's the map on the first page with the trails, and then on the back page is the ordinance. So that way they'll see the ordinance as long as the trails and stuff. So if it is passed, we are ready to be able to educate.
And there'll be what, little cubbies at this go?
No, we'll actually have them. We'll have them in the office. Our trail guy's going to have them. The library, I went down and talked to Cindy today. She wants some. So that way we can actually hand these to people, talk to them, and educate them.
And
we can...
Could we have some at like kiosks?
Yes, we have our kiosks. We'll put some in the kiosks. But that way we can educate people and talk to them as we're going, instead of just, you know, then picking up a piece of paper and not really knowing.
So we can just imagining, like, if there's on something at a trail, major trailhead.
Yeah, there'll be some there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you'll see in a little while on one of our signs, it's actually the map that kind of shows. So we are trying to get the word out. But we want to make sure that we're able to hand somebody something to be able to talk to them and explain what we're doing. And just to make it easier for everybody, hopefully.
So this slide shows where we're going to be putting signs at. There are, I think, nine, what I call double-sided signs. So it'll be one sign on one side of a 4x4 and a sign on the other side. You're entering, it'll say off-leash area. On the other side, when you're exiting, it says please leash immediately. So that way they should leash coming out of the trail. And there's nine of those. For our main entrance sign, there's going to be two. It'll be at the park and the library. I talked to Cindy today, and we came up with a place to put the sign at the library as you're coming in, so everybody will know before they get there that their dogs need to be on a leash getting out of their cars, because they were having that issue at the library. So we're going to have that before you actually get into the library parking lot. And then at the dog park, I have another sign that's going to say off-leash area, and it'll explain everything, the trails and stuff. I think the next slide are the signs that we're going to try. So I took the big sign on the left. That's a lot of localities use that sign. North Carolina, South Carolina, Pennsylvania, they use that type of sign. That's how I got that. And we just kind of fine-tuned it for the county a little bit. So the big sign on the left will be at the main park, and it'll be at the library, and it'll be a 2x3 sign, so it'll be a little bit bigger, so you'll be able to see it driving by, no questions. And then the one on the right will be at the dog park, and that just kind of tells, that's our designated off-leash area anyway, so it lets people know this is our off-leash area, and these are the other places you can go for off-leash areas. Our next sign, these will be at the trailheads. These are the double-sided signs, one on one side, one on the other. As you're coming in, I think there's nine spots of those. And then the last one is the one that'll be at the dog park. It'll be around the fields for off-leash area. That's all I have. Any questions?
Thank you for your work on this.
Yeah, appreciate it. We wanted to make sure those signs were right, that everybody liked those, you know what I'm saying? But thank you.
I think this is good government. I mean, we were moving in one direction, the public got involved, and we made a wonderful change. So, thank you, Aaron.
You're welcome. Thank y'all for backing us. I appreciate it.
All right. Tab E.
Oh, this is an action. Action on this.
I'll make the motion. I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the resolution to designate off-leash trails, dog parks, and dog exercise areas that are exempt from the prohibition in Section 4-2-5 of the Fluvanna County Code.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Hodge, seconded by Goad, seconded by Mr. Hodge. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, item E, resolution to approve local funding for the live fire training structure. Mr. Dahl?
Yep, I'll take this. And I also have some of the folks from the local live fire training committee. I got Ben Powell, who's been the acting kind of project manager for the county, former Chief Mike Brent, and then Chief Constantino. They've been all kind of intimately familiar with and involved.
And their FRA chief.
What's that?
And therefore,
I'm sorry, John. See, I was just looking in the back. John Lai as well, too. So I'll just give a little back history on this a little bit for those that maybe are not aware. So again, in August 2017, the county was awarded a live fire training structure grant, also known as burn building, for a prototype 2. Again, we got $450 for construction, $30,000 for architecture and engineering. And originally, when we did this, gosh, looking back on this, when it kind of started going back 6-7 years, maybe 8 years ago when this kind of came about, the original cost of the project was supposed to be around $630,000, and you know, with about $150,000 above the $450,000 county contribution, and then certainly that price has gone up significantly since then. So basically from June of 2018 to November 2022, you know, the county's really been working hard to try and get this project moving forward, issuing numerous solicitations for the prototype 2. We did an RFP for a design build project. We did 2 invitation for bids. We did some redesigns to try and save costs. You know, in the end, throughout all of these, it's been about $1 million project for this. And that doesn't even include some of the contingency funds, special inspections, electric and water, sewer. So it's been an expensive project, and we've done numerous iterations of this, and the end result isn't really changing for us. In September 2021, because of that, you know, a lot of localities are having the same issue. I actually ended up going to the fire services board meeting to request additional funding, just making the fire service board aware that, you know, a lot of localities, you know, from the pandemic are seeing these cost increases and there's just no additional funds for it. They were aware, but unfortunately the request was denied at that point. So winter 2022-2023, the local burn building committee was looking for additional cost-effective options. And then April 2023, a presentation was made regarding a prototype 4. Prototype 4 is basically a container type training structure. So that's kind of from there, getting some preliminary information, we started moving forward with that. So with the challenges that we've encountered to build a prototype 2 in a cost-effective manner, and the fact that we knew two other localities, City of Richmond and Goochland County, they received approval from the Fire Services Board for Prototype 4. And again, the Prototype 4 is not currently an approved prototype under the grant requirements. So since we knew that two other localities got approved, and there was us and another one, we said, let's try and go forward and see if we can get approval for the same type of thing, because we're running into cost issues. So in August 2023, about 6 months ago almost, you know, brought a presentation to the board to kind of determine how to move forward. And at the time, the board moved forward and said, let's you know, authorize me to kind of move forward with that. Went to the fire services board meeting. This was kind of some of the cost. Again, what was approved in August was considered Design B, which is a 5-container structure. So you've got one structure here, then you've got three long structures stacked on top of each other, and then up to the, and I'll show you a picture of them, then you've got one vertical structure as well. So the original estimate when we started looking at this was around $585,000. That cost has come up to about $680,000 now at this point. And again, that's just for the container. That's for the container, the props, the equipment, the training, and the shipping for that particular configuration. Again, the 680 does not include contingency funds, site work, special inspections, construction admin, or electric or water hookups. So we're currently estimating around 320. So again, we're looking at a maximum of about a $1 million project. So if the fire services board, we have a grant for 450, if it's a $1 million project, that would require a cost or a funding commitment from the county for 550. So this is just, I've got about six slides just showing you some quick conceptual, and actually these are more conceptual, working with one vendor to kind of come up with a Fluvanna specific design. And so this is just kind of showing the structure. Again, you got one container flat, and then you got three other containers stacked on top of each other, and then you've got the one vertical container there as well. And then again, just this kind of shows you know, some different components of the different layers of the containers, some of the props on the different containers for our training. Again, kind of showing some of the inside flow of the containers. Again, showing some different elevations and views of the inside of the container. And like I said, some of the fire folks in the audience could certainly speak more specifically to this particular model. And then this is just kind of looking at the general site plan layout of the project. So again, September 2023, made a presentation after the board approved for us to move forward. I made a presentation to the Fire Services Board, to the Live Structure Committee for the Prototype 4, requesting authorization for our grant to use for this and a grant exception. And you know, we thought everything was good. You know, the Live Fire Committee, and a lot of those are firefighters. They all were on board. And basically the Live Fire Training Committee approved it at that point. And so, you know, us and those that were there, Chief Constantino and Mr. Powell were in attendance there. We thought everything was good. We thought we could move forward. The next day, when the full Fire Services Board had their meeting, they ended up tabling the approval until December 1, 2023, because they're waiting to get more information from their engineers. Their engineers were looking at whether or not the prototype 4 was a good option for localities and something that they would want to utilize the grant for. So December 2023, again, and I attended the Virginia Fire Services Board meeting. And then there was another locality, the City of Hopewell, that was looking for an approval as well. The City of Hopewell was approved, and we were then again tabled to come back to them now in February. Some of the reasons they gave, more information was required, and that the locality had received multiple extensions. And then there was a comment about the county's funding commitment for the project. And, you know, I spoke to some of the representatives of the Fire Services Board afterwards and, you know, made mention, look, we've been working on this for 7-8 years. I think the fact that we've been working on this for 7-8 years and haven't given up, I think shows that there's no lack of commitment or interest from the county. And, you know, we've been working forward for numerous different designs, retweaks, and everything to try and come up with an affordable option for the county to provide an option for training for our volunteer firefighters. Again, for our volunteer firefighters, it doesn't make sense for them to leave the county to go do training because, again, they're volunteering here in the county, and the time that they're spending away from their families makes it even more difficult if they're going to other localities for that.
And if we have a fire, you're taking manpower
Correct.
And resources out of the county.
Correct.
That's going to happen this Saturday.
So
the trainees and trained people are going to leave the county.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to where that comment came from.
Me too.
Yes.
Whoever said it. Well, the city with 100,000 votes got approved, but the county with 20,000 votes didn't get approved. I'm sorry.
I mean, it was going up 60 grand a year. For us to not notice that would just be unintelligent. How does somebody take that as somebody said something out of line?
I don't know, but anyway. So to date, the county has received 5 grant extensions. So February 2024, again, we're here requesting for the board to take formal action. If the board takes formal action, I will then attend the Virginia Fire Services Board Live Fire Training Structure Committee meeting again, giving the same presentation. Well, some additional, again, depending on how this meeting goes, provide some additional information. One that more Fluvanna-specific design, if the board takes action on the funding commitment, and I will fight hard to get the structure moving forward again to allow us to use the grant funds for this. Again, we've been working on this for a long time, and there is certainly no lack of commitment from the county to do this.
So was the Hopewell applying for a prototype 4 as well? Or
they were. So when Hopewell went, they were bringing forward a brand new application. And so their brand, again, our application was back in 2017. They were bringing forward a brand new application in December, and they applied for wanting to use a prototype 4, and they approved it at that December meeting. And they wanted us to come back and provide more information and, I guess, show that there is a commitment from the county.
I guess I'm just, and it really has no bearing, I'm just wondering why our quote-unquote commitment would be contingent upon them approving us for a prototype 4. That seems odd.
So
we could approve it and they could still say, nope, you took too long.
Sure. They could. I mean, they certainly could. I mean, from my standpoint, if the board finds that you want to move forward with something, if we come up with some type of amount, I don't want to give them any option to say, well, they can always have an option not to approve it, but I would rather eliminate any comments or things that would give them the opportunity to not approve it.
I don't see why the board would not approve this and the resolution go along with it, because a previous board had already approved the commitment of these funds. We're just reiterating what's already been previously approved.
So
I've been steadily for this. the entire time.
I mean, if there's no objections, why don't we just move to the resolution and the question?
I'd like to make a motion.
And just really quick, this is just kind of a breakdown of the costs. Again, $680. Again, you can only use a grant for the structure itself. So minus $450 is $230 county cost. And then again, at the bottom, that $320, that's kind of some of the things we've got a good idea about, but we're unsure of. I mean, you know, getting someone to come in and level everything, there's costs there. But so the resolution is for a not to exceed amount of $550 from the county. If we do some bids and put some things out and things are looking like it's going to be more, I will say speaking with some of the local committee, the one thing we would maybe get rid of first is having a water line going directly to the site. Again, the grant allows that you can have tanker trucks that are providing water on site. And again, there's a hydrant right there at Fork Union Fire. So it's not like we don't have necessarily water there, but that would potentially be one deduction to reduce costs. And then, you know, I know some of them may not like this, but, you know, we may have to look for if costs are coming in, we could maybe look for a scaled back structure if it came to that. But anyway, that's that, and I'm happy to answer questions, and I'm sure anyone else that's here would be happy to answer any questions as well.
I think for the new members, I believe at one point in time, prior to looking at this type of level four, that we were looking at 1.6 million. Is that
now? It wasn't that much. I mean, it was always.
It was COVID, and then it was even higher.
So the prices were always coming in right around $1 million through I think through two to three different solicitations. It's always coming right around $1 million, and through multiple, you know, going back to the drawing boards, and so the structure for this is looking to be 680, and then whatever that site work and electric and water and some kind of special inspections would require.
Did the committee want to say anything?
All right. I got a question. I know we were having problems getting anybody to bid on the site work. Did we ever get anybody to?
So we never had anyone bid on the site work. Again, if we do this, you know, I'm going to work with Mr. Witten here to make sure that we can get. I think some of the comments we heard before, at least some of the local committee heard comments that our original bid documents for some of the site work was probably a lot for maybe your local contractor to really want to get into. So I mean, if there's a way to streamline maybe the site work piece again, because I think we're going to have to put this out as two different things. We put out the site work piece separate from the actual contract for the actual structure itself.
I see.
So hopefully with that, you know, hopefully it will be not as robust as the original bid package was.
Okay. Mike, did you want to?
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve a resolution to approve local funding for the live fire training structure. The not to exceed amount of $550,000 local funding to come from unassigned fund balance.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Sheridan, seconded by Mr. Hodge. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye. 5-0.
Okay.
What's that?
When y'all go down, I'd like to drive. Just let me know.
Yeah, it's the meeting's February 22nd is when the meeting is. It's in Virginia Beach.
Item F. Requesting an administrative program specialist position for the Public Utilities Department, Mr. Popowitz.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. So we are requesting a full-time position for administrative assistant. With that, we had an employee that left that had been there for many, many years. She was very competent with the Munis system, which is complicated for me anyway, system. And she moved out of the county. So currently, she had been splitting her duties with us and with the Public Works Department, which was, to me, a little bit tough on her. So we decided to move forward with restructuring. and have this administrative position in the department focus on the individual growing needs of the two departments. Currently, that position has been an integral part of our team. They handle our customer service, billing, dispatch for leaks, bookkeeping. They've handled our accounts receivable and payables, other bookkeeping duties and ordering. And currently, we haven't been able to do anything with our, we do some cursory inventory, but we want to put together a comprehensive inventory program. Some of the other things that are that this person does, you know, we added design at Crossroads last year, and we spent 3 days working on the module for Munis. So it's not like it's an easy thing to put Munis together either. I think Ms. Race was able to handle the workload because she was extremely proficient with Munis. However, with her ever-increasing workload, we were unable to have her doing more things for us. For example, the EPA lead and copper pipe inventory that's due in October. She did some work with us on that, but you know, her position was with Public Works, and so her loyalties would pull her away sometimes from our work. And so, in that, we would like to at least look at, or you know, make sure that we get something in there. Our current position is that we need that position immediately. What we're offering in return is to delay the operator position. That would give us a year and a half where there'd be a no revenue issue in the budget. And I think that with our current situation with our operators, we should also be able to hopefully in the next year eliminate the contract or most of the contract with our folks over at Sidner Hydro. We're required to have that particular contract because of VDH requirements. We need to have three licensed people. We currently have one licensed water operator. The other people aren't licensed, but they do a good job. It's not like they can't do the job, but they are still working on their educational programming. We don't have the capacity really to do a lot of this, a lot of the administrative stuff without that person in our on our team. So I'll be happy to take any other questions.
Questions?
And I'll say the only thing a little bit about this, you know, again, there's a little time in this to get this done. I know finance has stepped up and is helping out with billing in the interim right now, but it's certainly something that they cannot do long term, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I just fielded six questions today from folks in the in our area. Not that I mind fielding those questions, but you know, somebody being there full time would have been able to field those questions and also probably handle the issues that were at hand without me being involved in that, or at least cursorily involved in it. Mr. Mitchell also knows that type of stuff as well, but having that person when we're not there to be able to answer those questions and take care of that, that's another integral part of our team. And we're trying to improve our customer service. We're trying to improve our service with water quality and other things. And you know, we'd like to focus in on what we do best, and that's operating the systems and making sure that we get the best water quality we can. And this person would allow us to, you know, focus in on that from our other team members and handle the day-to-day billing, et cetera.
But one of my concerns, of course, is that although our report says it would have no financial implications, that's just for this year, because if you need that position, how long have you been advertising for the position that you're willing to drop now?
About 2 years.
Okay.
What our plan is, we don't, with the lay of the land that's out there right now with operators, we don't really think we could get a licensed operator for the amount of salary we're offering. If you remember, though, we did put into our system a career ladder. You know, and of course, you know, you made comment of that yourself, Mr. Chairman. That career ladder, I think, is our best chance of getting somebody new, young in, that we can train our way and also give them a step up. Now, that doesn't mean they won't go somewhere else, but if it's somebody coming from Fluvanna County and they want to be part of this community, a lot of your water operators that I've talked to want to stay in their community. And so I think that, and this is what we've seen a lot of those guys that are out there that are already licensed, take your salary or your positions, and they go to their current boss, and they say, hey, this guy's paying $75,000, you need to match it or I'm leaving. And that's what happens a lot with these guys. With that, there's also low pass rates on some of the, well, on just about all the licensures. And we think that our program is working well enough that we can get people licensed fairly short order. Because it does take a huge commitment to go into the educational programming and do all that. And we want people in that, but more importantly, we need to be able to handle our day-to-day operation. So
it's just, it concerns me, and I know you get it, that we are adding a position because you're gonna come back to ask for that position.
Yes, and it is a short-term as far as the added feature here, but also keep in mind that when we presented to you on the career ladder, we also presented that we were looking to have this person added to our team. So, and I would actually put it in the 25 budget to do that, I didn't know if it was going to make it to the budget cycle, but that's what we did as far as making my budget. I was asking for that position anyway.
You know, I guess one thing to keep in mind as certainly there's a county tax funded impact of some cost to this. Because of the way we allocate cost for our systems, some of the costs of all the personnel, because it's not like this person's working on this system, this person's working on that system, this person's working on this system. A percentage of all their costs go to the different water and sewer systems. So some of the systems, you know, like for instance, Fork Union Sanitary District is a system funded, is system funded only. There's no county dollars. So when that percentage of a person gets allocated to that system, it's 100% of the position is not funded by the county, but there is some portion that is.
So
first off, I want to say I talked to a constituent this morning who you were on the phone with,
yes,
and she told me how helpful you were, and I told her how glad I was that you got a hold of her before I had to relay what I talked to Matt about this morning, because I knew you'd do a much better job explaining it than I would, so I appreciate you looking into that issue we were having out there.
Yeah, we're happy to do that.
If I'm understanding you correctly, and I kind of echo the concern there that, yes, in this particular fiscal year, it is a net, it's not really a from a micro level, but from a macro level, when you look further out, I guess it is adding a position, as you said. But did I hear you correct? I just want to make sure I understand correctly. If we were able to hire, let's say you come to us next year and you ask us for this position that you're essentially replacing the administrative assistant for, if you hired that, we'd be able to basically get rid of some contracts that we're spending money on. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that the current personnel we have, is they're working through their educational process,
right,
and trying to get their licensing. So once they do that, we can eliminate, if we get two new licensing for water, we can eliminate the contractor that we currently have at Sidner. We would probably ask that Sidner stay on to do our sampling, but that would be a monthly thing. And then, but as far as them coming in every week and doing work for us, we could eliminate that because the health department is requiring us to have three licenses. We only have one. So we need two more licenses.
And you have those on staff currently training, correct?
Correct.
They're working toward it.
Yes, that's correct.
And so once they work towards that, I guess what I'm trying to rationalize is once they work towards that and achieve that, there's going to be some cost cutting. This may come out not quite what I guess what I'm thinking is, are we essentially paying this contractor in order to meet Virginia DEQ requirements?
Yes.
And so once we have more people that are there, we will no longer have to pay. And what's the differential of what those salaries are or would be versus what we're paying the contractor?
the salary would be less than what we're paying the contractor for a year, and they're giving us 40 hours a month, whereas the person will work 180 or more hours per month. So we're getting a net work gain for less money by hiring somebody.
Well, not by hiring. You have to have the licensing.
Right. Hiring somebody with a license or attaining a license.
But obtaining that license, like I've said, we're working with our current staff to get them to obtain that license. And the extra person really isn't needed for our licensing. It would be nice to get them in for licensing purposes, but what we really need them for is so we can start doing more maintenance, doing more things that we're supposed to be doing so that we can bring a higher level of service.
To add clarity, this position, even if it rolls over to the next fiscal year to bring the, I'm saying tech, what's the position?
Operator.
Utilities operator.
That would not affect at all the company that does the sampling, because he's in-house gearing up for that, whereas all the positions we're talking about in this action matter would not be associated with that, right?
Correct. And like I said, even if we had a licensed person, we'd still have to have one of our other teammates get licensed in order to meet the requirement for BDH.
I still think the best course of action is to defer this for 2 weeks or a month, have more detailed discussions of what personnel we need long term, and as people hook up Design Crossroads, there's going to be an additional workload factor that's going to come on for that. Now there's revenue that'll offset some of those costs, but rather than just dealing with the issue that's directly in front of us, we should know what our 1, 2, and 5 year plan for this is now before we make decisions.
My only concern there is that most of the folks, you know, in my area are on this system, and there is a lack in customer service without this position going there. And kind of to the point you made about the ordinance a few weeks ago with the dog ordinance, let's pass the ordinance and then come back and look at readjusting the map, which is what we just did. And so, but if we defer, then a lot of the people that some of us serve are without, you know, improved customer services. Is probably needed at this point. Is there a manner in which
can Chris, would this be a good time to add? I mean, do y'all want to say what we're going to do? So we would defer this to closed session.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk specifically about a position, then you could do it in closed session. You could come out and.
I think we're kind of overkill it. And you said yourself, public utilities is going to grow. That's going to happen. And so this is an operator position right now. I mean, an administrative position. We don't have the operator that we've been advertising for 2 years. By the time we do get the operator in this position, as Phil, chances are that we're already growing on the side of the operator position. And so I don't really know that we're going to solve anything in particular.
I know that you're talking about trying to have that plan mapped out, but until we get, I think this would be a good time for us to get an update from the JRWA project, because we haven't had one with the new members.
We have an action matter, so either.
I'm just saying, not now, but I think we absolutely need this.
I think Mr. Hodge has some questions that, and some discussion points that could be handled in closed session tonight. We could come out of closed session and go ahead and have a vote on this, and it would still get resolved this evening.
What's a closed session aspect?
So, I mean, closed session, you could discuss the job description, hiring an individual. You can't really discuss personnel within the department.
We don't have this is just an existing employee that is, I'm sorry, it's not an existing employee. You're advertising for a new employee.
Correct.
You're
to take care of these
so
paperwork.
We don't even have a candidate.
Yeah, and it's way more than paperwork, I can assure you.
Well, by the billing and things of that nature.
Yes, sir.
To allow the others to.
Yeah, as I said, the only thing I'm concerned about right now, finance is doing a little bit on the billing side, and I would not want to push that off another month. That's for sure. I mean.
But say what you want.
Okay. I mean, do we, my issue with this is, this work was being accomplished by a member of staff previously, and they were doing two functions, and the job was getting done. And you're creating a full 40-hour position, and my question would be, will the person be fully employed for 40 hours a week?
Mr. Hodge, I can guarantee you there are other things that I will be having this person do other than just the bare minimum. I'm going to need some help with some things with EPA and DEQ and those types of things. Things that I haven't been able to do with Shannon because she was did have split duties. And she did quite a bit. I would say her first estimate was about 75% of her job was with us at the time. So
this is true, and I worked with her, so I knew that she did the utilities, and I knew that she did ticketing and other stuff in public works. But there was also times where she had such excess time that she would get involved in other departments' business. So if you have that much time on your hand, was she really taxed?
Let me say, if it's an option that anybody wants to consider for whatever reason that fits the criteria to discuss this in closed session, then I would say somebody should make that motion. I'm trying to figure out if you're going to go ahead and handle this openly now, but my sense is that you want to handle it in closed session.
I would have preferred to.
I think if there's something that needs to be discussed, I would like to come. I don't know if this is a Dan or an Eric question, but is there a way that we can come back to this after we have that discussion?
You can table the motion later.
Because if leaving closed session, I feel that there's a reason that we can move forward. I think we should probably move forward.
Agree.
But, you know, I'm also inclined to, if there's information that I'd rather be privy to, I'd always like to hear that before making a final decision. So
we can come out and and deal with this at a closed session.
Tim, are you ready to make a motion, Tim?
I move that we table item F on the agenda.
I'll second.
Mr. Hodge has made the motion. Mr. Goge made the second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm a little concerned that the board is taking the position of trying to manage managers that are part of the administrative process. I mean, you know, that's getting to a micro level here, so I'm a little bit concerned about that. If there was specifics about the person involved, then I could understand that, but I don't, you know, I'm just not sure I'm concerned, so I'll vote out against.
Two and two, chair votes, aye in favor, passes 3-2. And I'd just like to give a chance for, I don't know what's in Tim's head and what's important to him, and if we can still resolve it tonight, then I'd like to give that opportunity. Let's move on to, thank you, Bobby.
Yes, sir.
Let's move on to item G. Resolution opposing House Bill 636 and Senate Bill 567. Which gives the SCC the authority to override local comprehensive plans and zoning ordinances for the siting of utility-scale solar, wind, and battery storage facilities. Mr. Whitman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. There is good news. House Bill 636 was carried over until 2025 by subcommittee yesterday, so that was good news.
So when you go back to, when we go back to the motion, you'll see I have a revised motion crossing out anything referencing 636.
So I removed all references to that in my presentation and in the resolution as well. So Senate Bill 567 had the exact same language. It basically would give the State Corporation Commission the authority to override local comprehensive plans and zoning ordinances for the siting of utility scale solar, wind, and battery storage facilities. So basically, the legislation would allow applicants to bypass the Planning Commission and Board of Supervisors when seeking approval for siting and operations of solar projects that are bigger than 50 megawatts, wind projects bigger than 100 megawatts, and energy storage, battery storage that are bigger than 50 megawatts. So basically, if the locality failed to act on the application within a specified time, or denied the application, even though the application complied with the minimum requirements of the ordinance, it could still, then it could apply for approval from the State Corporation Commission. So as long as it met the statewide ordinance requirements, the SCC could give approval. So then if the SCC did give approval, it would exempt obtaining all approvals, including any land use approvals from the locality. So basically what it would do, it would take away the incentive for developers to offer cash coffers as part of the solar siting agreement. Right now you're seeing these big projects down in Halifax, Charlotte County, where the developers are giving $1.5, $2 million cash up front. They would no longer have that incentive if they know the SCC would be approving their project. And also it shortens the time frame. Now you'd only have 120 days to approve or deny the use after filing, unless it's jointly extended for an additional 120 days, which is a pretty short time frame to get through staff review, planning commission, and board of supervisors. So those are the reasons that staff is suggesting that the board oppose Senate Bill, the Senate Bill. Now, going to the lady earlier to ask about the process. So Mr. Fairchild and I did go down to Richmond last Thursday for VACO VML Day, basically, where VACO staff presents to all the county staff and attorneys there. And then we actually met.
And Mike was there with that group, and I didn't see him.
Well, not that group. I was there with them.
And Mr. Fairchild and I went down to the new General Assembly building afterwards, after the meeting, to meet with our delegates and senator. We were able to meet with Mr. Delegate Garrett and had a good conversation with him about this resolution and two other resolutions that you'll see tonight. We weren't able to meet with Delegate Loeffler or Senator McGuire because they were both busy with other meetings.
Although we did meet with McGuire's aide.
We did meet with his aide, yes. And so basically, if these resolutions are approved, we would send it to the two delegates and our senator, and we'd also send it to David Blount, TJPDC. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And I will add that that morning when we had our board of directors meeting, we are not the only county that is not happy with these bills. It seems like many of the people that have the large data centers that need the power are okay. But VACO as a group is sending resolutions to everyone that the entire group is against it.
And I was there last night when the sponsor of the bill then said he didn't want it to be voted on last night. And I think the pressure, it was last minute enough where I think the pressure was from all the municipalities. And I know quite a few people from Flavanna sent in emails and then were lined up to talk last night in the hearing, and so I think the pressure's made this person back off of it. With that said, I say that in order to say that tomorrow, is it SB 697, which was up Monday, comes back tomorrow at 10 o'clock, and so anybody who can reach out to, I would say, not only our senators, our senator, but every person on the committee, just like anybody would want to send out something to not only the person, the board rep for their district to not vote on something, you would want to send it to all five of us. And I say the same there. We should be reaching out to every person on the subcommittee and saying that we don't want them to take our rights to make our own decisions on land from us. So I'd encourage anybody listening or whatever to do so. And then 567, I think, still has no
date or town assigned to it. When that video will hear that.
Okay.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the resolution to oppose Senate Bill 567, Senator R. Cree Deeds, which gives the Virginia State Corporation Commission, SCC, the authority to override local comprehensive plans and zoning ordinances for the siting of utility-scale solar, wind, and battery storage facilities.
Second. Mr. Goode makes the motion, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye, 5-0. Move on to item H, resolution opposing House Bill 800 and Senate Bill 713, which just make ready costs for broadband expansion to electric cooperative. Mr. Whitten.
And you'll see there's been a change in the motion. Mr. Whitten will speak on that.
Yes, there was also a major substitute to House Bill 800. Basically, it changed the cost, how the costs would be allocated. And when I talked to a CBEC representative today, they had worked with the legislator on making those changes to House Bill 800. And so they now have a neutral position on House Bill 800. Senate Bill 713 was not amended in the same manner, so that's why we still recommend opposing Senate Bill 713. But I'll go over those reasons. So basically, the legislation seeks to shift the responsibility for costs associated with the Make Ready efforts, basically bringing broadband to Virginia, which are efforts necessary to prepare the existing electrical infrastructure, including the poles, for co-locating the fiber and related communications to support the broadband expansion. But it would actually shift the responsibility for the cost of pole replacement to the electric co-ops, and such costs are not necessary to the electrical system. So because of the extra weight of the fiber, if the poles have to be replaced because of that extra weight, and it wasn't because of the pre-existing condition of those poles, then the co-ops would have to pay for those costs. And so the co-ops would be responsible for the cost of those pole upgrades to accommodate the attachments. So basically, the co-ops don't have the excess margins available for these infrastructure upgrades. So what would happen is the ratepayers would then have to foot the bill for the broadband construction costs, including the pole replacement. So it would shift the cost from the for-profit companies who bid on the broadband to ratepayers who have to pay the cost of replacing the poles. So then it would raise the utility costs for the members of the electric co-ops,
which I think were estimated to be around 25%.
Yes, they said around 25% approximately. So it would be a pretty big rate increase if they had to replace all the poles as part of the broadband.
We just replaced it.
And so basically what we'd rather see is that the internet service providers or grant dollars pay for the upgrades. So the language that was changed with House Bill 800 is it basically said that the only poles that have to be replaced were poles that already need to be replaced, the ones that are already failing, and not because of the excess weight from the fiber, but they were already failing beforehand. So when I talked to the CBEC representative, they were fine with that language. They just didn't want the language where basically because of the fiber, they would have to replace all the poles because they weren't designed for the extra weight.
I should have explained myself a little better, and I'll do this for you, ma'am. VACO is the Virginia Association of Counties, and that's where we all, as supervisors, are part of a group organization. And this is another one that VACO has spoken out against.
As well as other counties.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, the counties, as a group, other counties are doing it, but as a group, which is compilation of all the counties except one in our state. And
yes, then Louisa passed a similar resolution. Mm-hmm. Against
this bill. So, I mean, it's not just us, it's everybody getting on board.
Do you have a motion?
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the resolution to oppose Senate Bill 713, Senator David W. Marsden, which shifts make ready calls for broadband expansion to electric cooperatives.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Goad, second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye, 5-0. Now to the next public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board?
No.
Oh, no.
Consent agenda.
Oh. I missed that one.
That's public hearing.
Oh,
I
gotcha. All right. Consent agenda.
Oh, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Should we go ahead and go to closed session right now and finish this at the end because it's consent agenda?
We could if the board, we have that.
Because you've got to get started.
And we have the two new business items as well.
That's going to put you way behind starting your update.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know.
Whatever you want to do.
I'm going to
say go. Say
go. I'll just add that. I think the last two items might create a little conversation.
but maybe just a little from some updates I got right before the meeting. So I'd say let's try to roll through it quick. Are you good with that? I'm good either way.
I'm just trying to help everybody else out.
Yeah. All right, consent agenda. Is there any item anybody would like to pull?
Nope.
All right. That was quick.
I move that we adopt the consent agenda as presented.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Hodge, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye, 5-0. All right. Unfinished business. I was thinking there was, wasn't there something that came up before the meeting? Maybe not. New business?
SB 697.
So Senate Bill 697, this is the resolution to oppose the bill submitted by Senator Van Valkenburg. So basically what this would do, it would require all localities to permit utility scale solar and battery storage facilities as a special use permit. So right now, we do allow it as a special use permit, but this would actually require special use permits. So you would have to allow. So it would also require that localities develop an ordinance that establishes reasonable criteria and requirements. And so what that would say is you can't limit total amount, density, or size of the facility. So a lot of counties across the state have said, we only want 4% of the county in solar, or we only want so many acres of the county in solar. And you wouldn't be allowed to do that. And you couldn't limit, like, we want no more than 500 acre projects. Some counties say, I think it's Pennsylvania maybe, we want at least 5 miles between projects, you wouldn't be allowed to do that. So the legislation would also require the localities to permit the application regardless of the cumulative impact of the facilities, as long as the requirements of the ordinance are met. And so the localities should have the authority to address all the impacts through land use and through conditions for a solar siting policy. So we should have those land use tools, and this could take away those use tools. And also we would be against the state requiring us to no longer have regulations that permit the total amount, density, or size of the projects. So it's basically right now we don't have those limitations, but we could have ordinance amendments that would restrict that, or we could have a solar siting policy that restricts that. So this committee is meeting tomorrow. Our Senator McGuire is actually on the committee. So we will send this resolution, if it's approved, to Senator McGuire before the meeting tomorrow morning at 10.
Is that committee or subcommittee?
Committee.
So it has made it out of subcommittee already?
Senate does not do subcommittee. Okay. It's only the House that's okay. Not a subcommittee.
So with this, we can't put size restrictions on it. We have to have a special use permit, and currently it's in A1, but what if we said it had to be in industrial?
Can't do that. It has to be allowed in all districts.
In all zoning. So you can put solar in business or commercial.
Correct.
It's whatever they decide, right?
Well, I think it's instructive to pull up the actual.
So you tell me a solar company could want to put it in R4 in the middle of Lake Monticello, and we'd have to say yes?
We don't have a choice.
If you pull it up, they just add a line to the very bottom.
Yeah, let me pull up the actual.
Well, we would. It would be by special use permit, and we'd probably say no to putting it. I'm out. It's all these presumptions.
But once we deny it, it just goes to the SEC.
Yeah. And SEC.
Well, if that other bill were to pass, if the other bill passes, yes, this is, we got to look at them as mutually exclusive. And I know it's kind of, that's difficult when we just looked at the other one. But let's say the other one didn't pass and this bill passed. We would essentially, I don't know that it would necessarily, I think this is more of a principle one, because I don't know that this would necessarily change much for us, because we allow it by special use permit anyways. I guess maybe it would change where we would allow it by special use
permit. This would change, like, Knox County no longer allows it in A1.
Right.
They wouldn't.
Right, correct.
They would have to require by special exception in A1.
Yes.
Because of the current ordinances, or the current, what's the right phrase I should be using right now, the current 15.228 or whatever, the Code of Virginia already basically gives all these permissions to people, and then it's adding one extra section, Section D, which is now saying, and you, if you're doing utility scale solar, The other sections are more for individual scale solar, which basically says if you want to do this on your home, you're allowed to. If you want to do it in your business, you're allowed.
This is for solar to serve other than the needs of the property. So it's not roof-mounted solar. This is ground-mounted solar. Yeah. Normally, you wouldn't see that in R4 because the acreage price is so high. It would be too expensive for developers to build an R4, plus the limitation on the land.
Well, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I'll read the language. Basically, it's in G, subsection G, it says any ground-mounted solar or energy storage facility, including any solar facility that is designed to serve or serves electricity or thermal needs of any property other than the property where the facility is located, shall be permitted as a special exception, provided such installations in compliance with any provisions in the local ordinance. And it goes on to say those provisions cannot include the density, the acreage. So it would allow it in all zoning districts, but you have to allow it.
Yes. Special exception. And all the other conditions were specific to your own land and use. In the other sections before G. Those are already there. Those are already part of the ordinance.
And what would happen
a modification to that ordinance?
A parcel wasn't a conservation easement or in land use, you'd still have to allow it?
Not in conservation easement, because there's restrictions in the easement. That's a recorded easement. You can't overcome the recorded easement.
So land use, property and land use could put solar over the top?
Land use, they just fall out.
They would fall out.
Well, they would pay rollback tax.
Yeah, pay rollback tax. That's what.
But they're generally doing that because they want to do it, right?
You know, and it still has to come before the board and the planning commission because it's a special exception.
What I mean, I think, you know, what we're seeing is, and I was reading an article about this, and certainly at the VACO meeting when it was being presented, you know, this enormous demand that's coming for energy across the country in general, but specifically in Virginia right now for our purposes. You know, building new energy power plants is a multi-year process that can take a long time. Quick and easy solar scale utilities, a way for the utility companies to subsidize and meet the energy demand that they're being regulated to do. Without that flexibility and with more growing resistance, I think you're seeing these powers to be, particularly the minions of the world and so on, saying, hey, we're running into a lot of roadblocks and it's keeping us from meeting our goals, which ultimately affects, you know, the economic health and viability of the state as well, too, of the Commonwealth. So you're looking at that from that perspective. And so they're basically saying, let's not put in exceptions. You still have the power in place to do what you want to through the special use permit process and through the siting agreements that you negotiate. But I fear that if we, you know, I don't really have a problem against this resolution, but I fear that if we are part of the participants who then are creating the policy by saying, oh, well, we're only going to allow this in I-1 or I-2 or whatever, that we're just contributing to that factor. I think there's a very good mechanism already in place for the special use permit to do this that doesn't, you know, take away the powers of the board. And of course, you still have things that you could put in, you know, into your comprehensive plan, but again, limitations in there is what it's trying to address. So I'm not 100% convinced that whether we do or don't pass this resolution, you're still not going to see significant pressures growing to allow the development of utility scale solar and wind to meet the energy demands that the county, I mean, that the Commonwealth needs. So that's kind of my reading on this right now.
Well, Sullivan, last night, when he asked for them to not vote on the bill, his reasoning in bringing the whole bill in the first place was saying we set some goals as a state, as the legislature, and these people over here are doing things that are not basically on the bus, the team thing. And in order for us to meet our goals, they need to not be able to disrupt our goals. That's a summary of what he said. And first of all, maybe a lot of the goals they set, they shouldn't have, in my opinion. And second, I think they're clear that almost every county doesn't want them telling us what we're gonna have in our county and what we look like. So I was glad to see that that particular part didn't pass. And, you know, with roughly 90% of Savannah County being conducive to solar, and you got plenty of other, I mean, for example, down in Bath County and all that area, their terrain is not as conducive because of the hills and mountains. You got how much of Northern Virginia is built out. So the pressures could end up being, if it's not up to us to make the decision, the pressures could end up being on us in a way that's not...
But it is up to us, because there's a special use process, you know, that you go through, so the board votes on it. I mean, it's also, you know, a property owner's right. You know, they have a right to say, I hold on, this, I have this land, I'm being offered this amount of money to lease my land to a company to do this, which will generate revenue, which will allow my family to continue to hold on to that land. Unless the neighbors are willing to pay for the land, or unless they're paying a rental for the view that they have, that's your property. That's, you have that right to use your property as you see fit from that standpoint. It's a special use permit, and so there may be things that you have to go through in order to get a buy-in, if you would, from the standpoint of your neighbors and so on. And it's still, it's still a pretty complicated process. I mean, it's not like special use permits are a rubber stamp by any means. Still comes down to the board, still comes down to the neighbors, it still comes down to everybody saying what they want to do from that standpoint. But again, I look at it and say, if we create the conditions that are more restrictive ultimately, you will see the big powers come in and say, no, we need this, because it really does come down to security concerns. And it's not just the clean energy goals, Mr. Chair, it's also the fact that the energy demands are growing exponentially due to AI. And so they're really viewing this as a need in terms of the economic viability and strength of both the country and the Commonwealth.
And I think it, not only is it that, but I think when the housing industry hears that the lid's been taken off the jar, and suddenly the state steps in and says, well, you're gonna start having apartment complexes and so on, and I don't want them doing that either.
No, and I mean, I appreciate the concern for saying that we don't want you stepping in, but I'm also saying that if we create the kinds of conditions that make it so that they feel like they need to step in, I don't think that's healthy either.
I mean, I understand the need for solar, and I understand the growing energy needs, but I mean, there's large populations in the world that are going hunger, and we have food problems, and we're turning arable land for the foreseeable future for 20 and 30 years under solar. You can't grow anything there.
Well, I guess the questions come down. That's where the special use permit matters. Are you currently farming the land?
Yeah.
Is it profitable for you to farm the land? Do you have people that are working the land for you right now? I mean, those are all things that are there. A lot of Virginia, a lot of Louisiana land is not particularly conducive towards the growth of crops per se. So this really does boil down to, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna have to sell the land if you don't get this? You know, does that mean that the land gets sold and subdivided? I mean, so there's a lot of things that happen from that standpoint. So you have a blanket statement that says, oh, you're taking away the use, isn't necessarily there. I mean, if they're making a ton of money selling their crops already, why are they gonna do that?
And I was talking with one landowner, and the amount of money he can get from the lease from the solar company was greater than what he could get from a crop, with no fear of crop failure. Drought, nothing impacts it. You know, the higher, drier it is, the better it is.
They make more money behind it, right?
Correct.
It's hard to say no.
Well, and, you know, again, farmers, and they, this was part of that conversation at VACO, you know, getting to the stage where you can, you know, build your farm up, both the equipment and all that kind of stuff that's involved, the quality of the farm that you have, the labor that you might need for it, those can be really onerous tasks for a landowner to reach. So just because you say no to solar doesn't mean that there's going to be a farm there that's operational and producing.
This is true.
And again, I think that's the purpose.
But
of
it does take the option away for 30 years.
Yeah, you know, that is the purpose.
Well, I think it's more than just farming too. I mean, you look at logging, the logging industry, it's not just crops and food. Sure. It's there's a lot, especially in our area and surrounding counties, that are concerned about this. It's not so much about I'm turning around food and feeding a bunch of families. It's timber, which, I mean, does, I mean, we can't sit up here and specify all the things that timber does.
Number three source of revenue for the state.
You look at most of the things that they're doing to put these, you talked a couple weeks ago about the one on 53 in Albemarle. I mean, there's a lot, I mean, that was wooded area that's now cut down, and yes, someone's made some money off of that timber, and yeah, you know, life of a solar farm may be the life of a
you know, a timber cycle, we don't know. But, you know, I think when you look at cutting all of that down, you kind of have to look beyond, I think, just crops and things like that. I think we think the traditional, you know, here, you know, tilling the land, growing crops, we see a lot more of the timber stuff.
Isn't that really the decision for the landowner to make? I mean, to say, here's what it is, isn't that really the market driving it?
If that's the case, why have zoning ordinances?
Isn't the marketplace really dictating that if it's saying, hey, if solar is taking up the use of timber, then there's going to be less timber, which drives up the marketplace price for timber itself, right? I mean, that's free economics. That's it's playing itself out. You know, to the degree that we're trying to contain or say this is the way that land should be used specifically, you know, to a landowner without, you know, giving due process, if you would, I think is a you know, it's I wouldn't want, for example, Chris, let's say, you know, you wanted to sell your business, you had this wonderful offer to sell your business, and your neighbors come up and say, no, that business has been here a long time, we don't want you to move it out of here, you can't move it out of here. Is that fair?
That's not, they're not similar conversations.
It's personal property, right? It is personal property. And you have a right to that property. And unless someone else is offering you something. Yeah, you do have a right.
I mean, if General Motors came and said they wanted to build a 2 million square foot plant in the middle of the countryside, that is not all about the landowner. The people who own that property know they do not have the right to have a 2 million square foot manufacturing plant put on their property. So this is an industrial.
Go through the rezoning process. They've got an industrial.
Right. In other words, they don't have that total right.
Right.
There's a process that says you don't have that right, and it's an industrial facility. It's not a farm, and you put an industrial facility out there, and so
is that the reason this bill is coming up is because of exactly what you're proposing, right? Which is you want to have the board consider looking at making zoning for utility scale solar to only be available in industrial land, right? Industrial zone land, of which we have almost none. So you're just adding in another process that a potential landowner and or company would look at in order to get to that point. So you're adding that extra condition. The reason that this is happening at the state level is because of exactly those kinds of actions. So while I have no objection to saying, hey, I don't think you should be doing this, I do have objections if we are then turning around and doing exactly what they're objecting to, right? So I think you have to be consistent in the method.
Yeah, so we're gonna be dealing with that next meeting, I think, next board meeting, that regarding Appomattox, so we can have all this conversation then.
The only thing I'll say is this. It just seems to me that all the counties that are having these things put in that are requiring all the excess energy, and we're going to be stuck with things that don't make a lot of money.
Well, we don't generate our tax on
it. That's what I'm saying.
That's not accurate. First of all, it's a growth of an industry that allows it to be brought to the area. I mean, how many solar farms does Louisa have in conversation?
People are going to respond to what you said, just like we're all responding to each other.
Well, I mean, for what Mike said, I would rather Louisa have the solar farm and we'll take their data center.
Well, my point being is that they don't have a lot of solar farms, and yes, if you want to get data centers, then you need to have the energy, and Dominion needs the energy, or CVEC needs the energy, and to the degree that we don't allow the growth of energy in our country and in our state, we're limiting that factor. And you're also going to then, in turn, drive up the energy costs because you don't have the ability to do that, which means that they have to go out and buy the energy from someone else, right? So it is a complicated problem, right?
One we're not going to solve tonight.
Right, I agree. So, and I see your point, Tony, and as far as that's why they're putting these bills in place. I think somebody, if you can, somebody should make a motion.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve a resolution to oppose Senate Bill 697, Senator Schuyler T. Van Valkenburgh. Second.
Motion made by Mr. Goode, seconded by Mr. Hodge. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? The chair votes aye. 5-0. All right, we'll have our second round of public comments.
Oh, no, one more.
How do I keep skipping over?
to the new item.
Okay.
The school budget presentation.
Yeah, so I had a conversation with Dr. Grutz today, and apparently his board asked, is there a way for us to push back their presentation to the board? So right now they are scheduled to present their budget to the board. I'm sorry, this is assuming that it was changed. Currently they're on
21st.
Currently they're on the February 21st meeting for a work session. What we are proposing is swapping with county department reviews and CIP review, moving those to February 21st and pushing the school's budget presentation back to March 6th. Reason being is, from the state level, they don't really have a whole lot of clear-cut guidance on what their budget's going to look like or what the templates are going to show from a revenue standpoint. Speaking to Dr. Gretz and Ms. Gillum, they are hoping that by the end of the month, they'll have better guidance on what that looks like. And so from that, they feel they could provide a better budget and something that is more solidified by that point. So that's really the crux of it. And, you know, just it would just be flip-flopping when they present. Again, some of the downfalls are, so after the March 6th meeting, we would have a March 13th budget work session. We would have a March 20th budget work session before our 7 p.m., I'm sorry, before our 6 p.m. regular meeting. And then at the 6 p.m. regular meeting, we would be setting the FY25 budget and tax rate. So
is that the one where we're just setting
the high
mark?
The high mark.
That's not setting the tax rate. That's just saying we can't go above this.
Yep.
So, I mean, we don't have to have everything cut and dry for that meeting. We just need to be able to pick a number that says we're not going above here.
Correct. So that's what they requested. I spoke to Mr. Fairchild about this today, and, you know, our initial thoughts, I didn't see any issue with pushing it back if they feel they can provide something better, but, you know.
I don't have a problem with it.
There would just be a motion just to approve the amended budget calendar.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the amended F25 budget calendar as presented.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Goad. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Passes 5-0.
Second round of public comment.
Now, second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board to come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic directed to the board. Anyone wishing to address the board?
My name is Patricia Bierce-Block, and I live at 103 Island Hill Road in Palmyra. Board of Supervisors, I appreciate your thoughtful concerns about the solar. The impact of having solar energy used and built anywhere that large companies want to move into an area. Some of the problems that we really need to consider about, what about native lands? Are they going to be part of this movement to just acquire land whenever a company wants to put a solar system in place? How about the infrastructure that supports the solar system? You have transmitters and collectors and wires that overhead that it will impact neighborhoods. We're really being encumbered by some of the practices that are used today, like blockchains for cryptocurrency. They use a tremendous amount of energy, and we suffer for that. And that's not necessarily good practice. To encourage by allowing endless not that I had solar panels at my home, and I very much appreciate having solar panels, but to having an industrial approach to using solar panels and using them and putting them anywhere that a company wants to put them, I oppose. It's really taking away our rights to own land and live the way we want to live. So I appreciate your thoughts, and I hope you continue to pursue this issue of just unabated growth in solar systems and other any system where some company can just come in and take pretty much confiscate your land and use your land for whatever it might want to use it for. Thank you for allowing me to express my opinion there.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Anybody else? Seeing none, we'll close the round of public comment. And so since we're supposed to start budget at 7.
I would probably say, I mean, I'll look to legal. I mean, again, it's not a public hearing. So, I mean, I think with it being a work session, I think there's a little more flexibility.
Yeah, it wasn't advertised in the paper at 7 o'clock.
This isn't going to take terribly long.
Yeah, and the discussion closed session should take 2
minutes. I would say let's go to closed session, and then you can get a little sustenance while we're on.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Urban. We tabled that item. We can still come back to it.
After
closed session. Okay. Come back.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors entering into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1 and Section 2.2-3711A5 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, employees of public utilities and public works. 3, prospective business update.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed session be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of every member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from the meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and 2, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Hodge, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. And this one we have to do
individual call.
Roll call.
I vote aye.
Aye.
Call him by name.
Mr. Hodge.
Aye.
Mr. Goode.
Aye.
Mr. Sheridan.
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0.
And so, Mr. Chair, I mean, do you want to bring back the motion for... Oh, here it is. Let's that.
I move, are we ready for one?
Yeah, yep. No more discussion?
We're ready for the question.
I move that the Board of Supervisors to approve a full-time administrative program specialist for the Public Utilities Department with the funding to come from the vacant utilities operator position.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Goode, seconded by Mr. Hodge. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Board votes aye. 5-0.
All right, for the budget work session, so we have, and it should not say my name, that should say FY25 revenues and expenditures, that'll be Ms. Melton, but I'll be providing kind of a high-level summary of my budget proposal. And so one, you know, acknowledgments, the process included active participation and collaboration with constitutional officers, agency heads, directors, and department heads. Certainly a special thanks to Ms. Melton and her staff and Commissioner of Revenue, Mr. Sheridan and his staff to kind of put this together. So kind of looking at that budget development process, again, we carefully review revenue projections from all existing revenue sources to minimize the need for tax rate increases, perform a detailed review of expenditure budget requests, incorporate essential personnel requests to best support Fluvanna service, support staff with adequate compensation and benefits, identify any potential funding shortfalls for the budget discussion, determine any service gaps or new services, and then refine future years for planning. So some of the budget pressures, you know, certainly increase costs for providing public safety. The biggest one is, you know, kind of new, we have the newly created Department of Emergency Services, which is now providing paid county staff, EMS providers. You know, we certainly have costs related to our affiliated regional facilities at Central Virginia Regional Jail and Blue Ridge Juvenile Detention. And then just looking at aging fleet of all of our public safety equipment. You know, from a county standpoint, we have aging facilities, fleet, and equipment there as well. Between the county and schools, we have combined over 33 buildings with HVAC and over 300 vehicles. And then just the increasing cost of goods and services over the last 12 months, the CPI increased 3.4%. And certainly budget pressure, you know, we want to maintain competitive salaries and benefits for county and school system staff. New and expanding water and sewer infrastructure needs in our designated growth areas to support economic development. And then certainly, you know, we have a high existing debt load. Fortunately, you know, we had a good size payment drop off this year, but it's still about $9 million for debt service. So my fiscal year 25 budget proposal total budget $107.5 million. So with my budget proposal, there is no change to the real estate tax rate, remains unchanged at 84.4 cents. Personal property remains unchanged at 410. And again, there's no change to business or public utility personal property taxes. They remain steady at $2.90, and no change to the M&T rate at $1.90. The overall increase in county expenditures is a little over $1.9 million, which is a 1.9% increase from the FY24 amended budget. So just kind of looking at revenues first of all. So again, obviously, since the expenditure budget increased 1.9, this is kind of the breakdown of the revenues of where that is. So mostly the net increase, if you look at kind of the general fund operating account, increased by about $536,000. We had some increases and decreases, but mostly it's mainly in part to increase real estate revenue, primarily residential and public utilities. And then we also, in revenue in this category, we have an increase in sales tax. And also, we also increase the interest income that we budget for as well, too. So that's kind of one component. You know, the schools do have a net increase in what is proposed right now from state revenue. Now, that's from the governor's template. We'll have to see what happens with that once the schools come forward with their full budget request, but from the initial governor's template budget for schools, it's shown an increase in school revenue of $873,000. There is a decrease in debt service revenue, and really the main piece of that is we use less fund balance this year for debt service as we did previously. We have a net increase of $1.4 million in CFP project funding. This year, we're utilizing increased fund balance for the CIP, and this also reflects a reduction in ARPA funds and some state grants that we got last year, and then some small ones. We just had an increase in enterprise funds of $21,000 and a decrease in social services state and federal revenue of $181,000. When you look at general government, and again, to just remember, you know, my budget request does not include what's going to be the ask from the schools. Down here it says the schools will present on February 21. We've changed that. That'll be March 6. So here, this just kind of shows by function category of kind of what the FY24 budget, amended budget was and what my proposal is. And then again, going back to that same 1.9% increase. That's kind of where total expenditures were. And you can see as you go down the line here, you know, there's either some nominal increases in those functions or there's decreases. And the one that's a little bit of an anomaly sometimes is when you look at non-departmental. Remember, every year when we budget for salaries, health insurance, or VRS or anything like that, all the money kind of goes into this one pot, and then throughout the year we kind of disperse that to all the departments. So that's not really a true look at non-departmental, but that's kind of where the budget remains right now. But again, overall, it's a 1.9% expenditure increase. So some of the kind of the more of the key increases in each one of those categories that, that led to each one of those areas potentially going up. Again, reassessment was a increase over last year of about 92,000. And it's not because we have higher costs this year. It just has to do when the reassessment cycle in that contract hits in the fiscal year. So again, in fiscal year 25, the budget and the reassessment cycle is going to be starting. That'll be in effect for fiscal year 26. You know, this budget year, we don't have a reassessment. So that just reflects the true cost of when that reassessment contract is hitting the budget. From IT, about 52,000 over last year. Again, 35,000 of that is a one-time cost for a server replacement. And then the remainder of it is just some increases for some software services. Again, you know, the IT budget kind of houses everything IT software related for all county departments. So as you all are aware, you know, costs of goods have increased. Certainly software services do. You know, we generally see at least a 3% increase every year. And we have contracts that try and limit that too. Public safety, as I talked about. So, you know, in fiscal year 23-24, the county and the board moved forward with creating the Department of Emergency Services, you know, hired an EMS supervisor, hired 16 EMTs, ALS, BLS providers, part-time ALS, BLS providers, and then all the associated personnel and operational costs with that new department. Also, in this fiscal year, the board also authorized to implement a QRV, a quick response vehicle, which is staffed by a paramedic. So we have two ambulances, 24/7, you know, 365, and then we have a QRV per shift too, where we have a paramedic in there. So for in fiscal year 24, the QRV costs are being absorbed with vacancy savings. But in fiscal year 25, those costs are reflected in this budget. And then also for Mr. True and Mr. True's budget for the department also, there's some significant costs for EMS education equipment. That roughly is about $50,000 for EMS education equipment. Again, some of that would be one-time costs to get the necessary equipment for the provider so they can do training and continuing education. So in 25, the emergency service department is creating about a $276,000 increase over the previous fiscal year. Health and welfare, you know, namely CSA, is showing about a $104,000 increase in community-based services. Just remember, out of that $104,000 increase, about 60% of that is state, about 40% of that is the county's contribution, and we budget that state revenue on the other side. And then we talk about that there's been, in my budget proposal, I'm proposing some increases for a staff pay plan, health insurance, and then Virginia Retirement System. And in the next slides, I'll talk a little bit more about that. So as far as employee compensation, you know, certainly we want to maintain competitive compensation and attract and retain high quality employees. So one, my budget does include a 2% COLA for all county staff effective July 2024. So that equates to a little over $288,000. Every 1% of a COLA equates to about $144,000. I'm also proposing a 1% bonus for all county staff in December of 2024 for $135,000. And the compensation board reimbursement for that bonus is $24,000. And the reason I'm doing that is, so one, I wanted to try and get to a CPI neutral index for staff of around 3%. The reason I'm breaking it up by the 2% and the 1%, from the state right now, what the state is proposing for constitutional officers or state-supported employees, they are proposing a 1% bonus in fiscal year 25. They're not providing any COLA. So in a way to maximize or lower the overall cost of implementing that 3%, and so we can get some reimbursement, I'm proposing the 1% bonus in December and then the 2% COLA. Now, the state could come back, you know, once the House and Senate kind of go in session and kind of start looking at the budget. You know, the budget from what is in the governor's budget could be vastly different, and so we'll see what kind of happens throughout our budget process, but that is what I'm proposing from a compensation standpoint. Any questions on that? For health insurance, so you can, and I apologize too, the chart to the right just kind of shows what the county has done for staff over the years between COLAs and then some special pay increases. So you can see, you know, for a while the county was pretty flat at around, roughly around 2%. And then over the last three fiscal years, you know, it's been 5%. We also implemented 5% and a comp study with some increases for years of service in position. And then last year, the board approved, or for the current fiscal year, the board approved a 7% COLA for staff.
Some of that 5% number was state driven as well, too.
Correct. So. Correct. All three of the five. In 2023 and 24, those numbers were driven by state. For health insurance, so the chart to the right just kind of shows some of the increases. Just to kind of give you a quick recap, you know, from fiscal year 16 to 17, we saw a big increase. We were seeing a big increase. We were with Anthem, the local choice, in fiscal year 17. And so when we did that, the county decided to go and go look at a different provider. You can see what happened for the next 3 years after we switched to providers. We had double-digit increases. So after that, you know, we decided to go back out to bid again, and we really took a look at, we wanted to get back on Anthem, the local choice. One, it provides a good benefit for staff, and it's a state pool program, so it offers good competitive rates. And you can see, since we've been back with Anthem, the local choice, you can see when we left our previous provider and went back with Anthem, we had almost a 21% decrease in our premiums. And then you can see for 22, 23, and 24, you know, we had some increases, but fortunately there were not double-digit increases. So in my budget proposal, includes $136,000 to cover a 6% portion of an estimated, speaking with Ms. Snow in HR, and some of her HR circles, and kind of, you know, through SHRM and through, you know, what others are looking at, they're saying to potentially budget for about an 8.5% increase. So again, my budget includes covering 6% of that 8.5% increase. And then, just if you want to know what, every 1% of a premium increase represents about $22,000. Also this year, because it's through VRS, they do a biennial look, actuarial looking at rates. So this is the year that the biennial rates come forward. Previous years, we had some decreases. This year, we're showing a 0.76% increase for all of our VRS rates, and that'll be in effect for 25 and 26. Based upon county payrolls, that equates to a little over 93,000, and we don't have any option. It's not like we can choose to pay for that or anything. That's just a cost that the county must pay for. New positions. So you can see down below, some new positions, two new positions for the deputy sheriff, for the emergency services department. If the county wanted to implement two peak 12-hour shifts in Station 3 at Kent Store, which would be four EMT AMT providers, and also an option to have two paramedics in a QRV, there's costs. We have costs in here for that, but that's not in my budget. There's also requests for a part-time park maintenance worker for Parks and Rec. There's a request for a part-time library program specialist in the library. There's a couple there's probably about 9 position upgrades, 2 of them in the sheriff's office, and then 7 of them in the clerk of the circuit court's office. My budget proposal does not include any new positions or position upgrades in this budget year. and I'm sorry, this is really, really tiny, trying to fit it on here. Again, from a capital project standpoint, we had roughly about $13 million worth of projects that came forward in the CIP. My budget is proposing about $8 million of those $13 million projects. So I'll go down the list here really quick. So Mr. Spitzer requested some concrete slabs under structures at Pleasant Grove Park. I did not include that in my budget. He's requesting baseball and softball field fencing at Pleasant Grove Park for $180,000. My budget did include that fencing. Under Public Works, capital reserve maintenance fund for $250,000, that's in my budget. Public Works major equipment, which would be, you know, any type of heavy equipment or one-ton trucks or anything like that, dump trucks, was requested. That was not included in my, I did not include that in my budget. I think we can push that off for another year. Improvements at the Fluvanna Convenience Center for $390,000. I know that's been, there's been lots of community discussion about that and looking to do kind of a reconfiguration of that facility there. For $390,000, that is included in my budget. New PG Park bathrooms for $545,000. Not that I don't think it's warranted. I think we need to get some of our water and sewer infrastructure planned better there before we approve any new facilities at Pleasant Grove Park that needs water and sewer infrastructure there. So for $545,000, that is not in my budget. Performing arts in this building, it needs a new HVAC upgrade, $150,000, that's included. Fencing at the Public Works maintenance shop behind here for $65,000. In the current year's budget, there's money for a metal shelter building to cover all the Public Works, all the equipment that the county has, instead of leaving out the elements and things like that. And this would fence off that whole back area there.
Has there been any people messing with anything?
Yes. Yes. Historic courthouse renovation, $1.3 million. That is not included in my budget. Again, we've got about $800,000 to $900,000 currently right now that we're trying to get moving forward on that. So I think we've got time to get forward with the phase one project before we need to look at the phase two.
Is there some timing aspects to that that mattered, if I recall, in that conversation? Like, did Gordon, we just make the full commitment to it?
We made the full commitment to phase one, and remember, we got state funding for part of that. So that's really the focus. Let's get some of the funding that the county put out and the state provided to get the phase one stuff. And again, right now,
there's no impact in phase two or phase three.
No. Community center generator for $150,000. You know, right now, if we have to do any type of emergencies to shelter, we only have the high school. To man the high school for any type of, even if we have to do a small little thing, whether it's, say Fort Union runs out of power, we don't really have a lot of good spots in the county that have generators that the community could go to. And so, what's that?
The fire departments are probably the only ones.
Well, and it's not good to have
right,
citizens intermingled within fire departments if there's an emergency. So there's a proposal for $150,000 community center generator for $150,000. And actually, funny enough, just through VDEM, a grant came out. A grant just came out literally 2 days ago that me and Ms. Smith are working on to submit for. I think they will provide up to 67% of whatever the request is. So even though I have $150,000 in my budget, we may be able to trim what our percentage of general fund balance is down on that.
And when would you know?
I don't know. I know the deadline to submit the grant is February 15th, so right around the corner. Ms. Smith was supposed to find out what that is. And I can let the board know probably by the next one or two budget meetings.
I'm guessing there's other ones out there as well.
Yeah, it was funny. This one literally just came through in an email just as I was literally finishing my budget document. So,
and I hope that we get it. But I can tell you right now, we spent a lot of time writing grants when we had to replace all of our SCB A equipment because it all ran out of things. We spent $1.3 million hoping we were going to get grants. They decided, I think Fairfax was more needy than us.
Yeah. Social services vehicles, there's 55 and some change included in my budget. County vehicles for $200K, we can push that off. I think we are good on vehicles at this point. We can look at that next year. Under public utilities, I know Mr. Popowitz came forward before to talk about a water line replacement in front of the Carriage Brook complex here. Mm-hmm. That's going to need to be done. The one thing we're going to have to look at is again, generally the county doesn't fund water system specific upgrades like that. We may want to think about that a little bit because really a lot of that water system provides benefit to this building and the schools right there, Carriage Brook complex. And so we might have to look at is there a shared path right now? I don't have fund balance for this, but that's for board discussion and consideration as we move forward. Under sheriff's office for sheriff's vehicles, the sheriff requested a little under 400 some thousand for about 7 vehicles. I included in my budget funding for four of those 7 vehicles. There was money in the budget for a sheriff's office or just a county mobile incident command vehicle. We've kind of got that in a trailer right now. That's kind of at end of life. That's $125,000. That was not included in my budget. There's money for a new Fluvanna courthouse security system for $151,000. That is included in my budget proposal. When you go under emergency services for the county's department, there's funding in there for ambulance replacement of ambulance 45 for a little over $500,000. Updating cardiac monitors for $288,000, that was not included in this year's budget. Replacing AEDs in county apparatus, and then taking the AEDs that are in those and putting them in county buildings, because no county buildings have any AEDs in them right now. So I know that was a discussion that we've had about making sure we had AEDs in county buildings. So there's a way to get new AEDs and then take those ones that are maybe not as tough ready or mobile ready in ambulances and put them in county complexes. That's $68,000. Ventilators for the Department of Emergency Services, $135,000. That was included in my budget. Lucas and McGrath devices, basically chest compression devices for $173,000. That was not included in this budget. When you go under fire and rescue, there are five requests, replacing engine 52 and engine 11, engine 52 for Lake Monticello, engine 11 for Palmyra. That's a little over $1.2 million for each one of those. The reason that those are moved forward, actually those were from a 20-year replacement cycle, those were scheduled to be replaced, one of them for next fiscal year and another one, I think, for fiscal year 27. There's some changes coming forward and I don't have any fire.
It's emission standards on the engines.
It's emission standards on the engines. So if we don't purchase them in this year, that will increase to the emission standards that would increase the cost to the engines. I think the cost is about $100,000 more, plus there's, if you push the engines out, there's some inflation factors built in. So the amount that they had in next year's budget request was $1.382 million. If we fund them this year, it's about $1.2 million. So because of that, I moved the two engines into this fiscal year to fund those. Car 50 for Lake Monticello for a little over $100,000. That is not included in my budget request. Brush 30 for Kent Store for a little over $300,000 is not included in my budget request.
Was that this year's replacement cycle, or was that one that we put off?
We put it off from last year.
Yeah, so that's been, this will be 2 years that we put off.
Yes, but I know, And like I said, once we do CIP, I know it was rechastened in 2016, I believe.
But I can't remember what year we rechastened it, but we used our old attack truck and put it on top of a Hummer body. So we've got an additional use out of it.
Yeah, I mean, again, with everything, this was a heavy budget year, and so, you know, as we go forward, maybe there's a way to mix and match some things, but again, that one was not in my budget. Fork Union was requesting additional personal protective equipment for $53,000. That was included in my budget. And then under the schools, again, funded the capital reserve maintenance fund, central elementary bathroom renovation.
Can I ask you?
Yes.
How often do we max out that fund?
Max out what fund?
The $200,000. The maintenance.
We don't. I mean, so the idea is you try and get a surplus, you know, you get, it builds up so when things come due that the money is there to approve larger big time, one time things that are maybe not CIP worthy, but are more than like a $5,000 fix here and there to replace things. So no, I mean, we don't max out, you know. I think the good thing is from having the fund there, certainly everything comes forward to the board for their approval and in consideration, and it's there as really, you know, we have a lot of old teaching facilities, and probably if contractors and contract work was more readily available, I think we could easily go through that to get the stuff done that we need to. And probably use up the fund if that was available. But no, I mean, so to answer your question, I think we've always had somewhat of a balance in there, and maybe roughly $200,000 to $300,000 is this kind of the, if I had to think about an average going back, that's probably been the average carry forward balance, I would guess. Again, I talked about the central bathroom renovation. I got $1 million in my budget. Remember, the board approved $488,000 for carryover, so that reduced their request, the original $1.5 million request. The schools are requesting open gate detectors for $200,000. That is not included in my budget request. FCHS is requesting track resurfacing and milling for $900,000. And then they're also requesting for the high school field turf replacement for $475,000. Those are included in my budget request. The school's also requested at Fluvanna Middle School track resurfacing and milling at the middle school for $1 million. That was not included in my request. School buses, they requested, I think it was about $540,000 for school buses, which equated to three large capacity school buses. I think the county has done a pretty good job of replacing buses over the years. So I basically provided funding for one school bus in my budget request. And then for student transport and facility vehicles, a request of 100. I propose $50,000 of that. Any questions about CIP? And again, the total CIP is $8 million. It's probably a little bit more than I would originally want to go. I will say from the fire rescue point, if we didn't have this emissions piece originally, the request coming forward was going to probably be about half that amount, if not less than that. Because again, you had some of these big pieces of apparatus that were in out years. And I think really they had a lot of smaller pieces being replaced this year. You know, the schools have certainly some big requests. And
quick question.
Yeah.
Which one was it for 2027?
I'm sorry?
You said one of the trucks was scheduled to be replaced in 2027.
That was 11, I think, because it was 15.
I think Palmyra was 2027.
And I'm just saying, the only thing in my mind is, and I know what we're trying to do, we're trying to beat this pricing gouge, but that one's 4 years down the road, 3 years down the road.
I don't disagree.
As far as the track goes at the high school and the football field, if you're going to do one, you need to do, might as well do both. The football field has gotten down to where the turf is only about this tall. So that needs to be done. We've made it a year longer than the Albemarle schools did.
Why should they be done together?
Because that way you're not tearing it up twice.
Yeah, but isn't it different contractors?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
I imagine it probably would be.
But you don't want to risk passing out the track.
You do the track, then you do the turf, and the track is bubbled. And it is.
I'm sure there's a way to put over protective something if you have to drive over the track. Again, I think on February 21st, we're going to have a CIP meeting. I think we can get deep in the weeds and ask those that have submitted requests for these projects.
We have tried to do things like that before.
So the Palmyra one was the one that's 3 to 4 years out?
It's fiscal year 27. It's 2 years out. Palmyra is 2 years out, and Engine 52 was actually not supposed to be replaced until fiscal year 26.
Even if we approve it now, the build time... Well, they're probably like
18 to 2 years.
2 to 2 years in.
So those are all the CIP requests, what was and what was not funded in my budget.
I have a question.
Yeah.
The Admin building has always had a drainage problem on the front of it.
Yeah.
Why is that never on a CIP? It's not like we're not going to use the building. So if we build a new Admin building, we're going to move core services in there. So isn't it like avoiding the problem and letting it get worse rather than... at least listen to it, even if we don't fund it, identify the problem and then do something about it, either now or later?
There are a couple things that I did not see in the CIP that I thought was one of them. Now, granted, that was not one of them, but I know we tried to do an admin building renovation back during COVID with COVID money that would have addressed that, but we didn't do it, and that project didn't move forward, so the problem's still outstanding.
But shouldn't it be somewhere even on your 5-year CIP plan? And it's not on there either.
I think that's a good question for me to ask my Public Works Director.
That's Public Works Planning and Planning Commission, right?
No, just Public Works.
But Public Works would initiate the process to go to Planning to get to the Planning Commission.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are the CIP requests. And again, just really quick, so fund balance. Again, the county maintains a conservative fund balance policy of 12% of general fund revenues and school revenues less. You kind of have to less out what the county's portion is from the general fund to the schools. So our 12%, you don't touch number, is about $11.2 million. That's kind of the emergency fund. Above that $11 million, we have roughly $15 million that the board can use for things like CIP or whatever the board wants to use that for. So that just kind of shows what the fund balance has been over the years. And the biggest reason we have a bigger gap right now, just due to a lot of CIP project delays, fire and rescue apparatus and things like that, we have more projects currently committed than we did have in years past, but that's going to come down as some of these things move forward. Just looking at unemployment rate, it's no big surprise looking at the chart to the left. Our unemployment's back to what it was almost at pre-pandemic. Currently, as of looking at the BEC, the county's unemployment rate is for November was 2.5%. Looking at sales tax, again, the county's had nice increases in sales tax. We went up almost 9% between 20, and again, these are in calendar years, and this comes from the state, went up almost 9% between 21 and 22. We went up 8.2% the year before that, and then we went up 18-some% the year before that. And so you can kind of see that big jump right there between 19 and 20. The biggest piece of what that is online retailers now remitting and reporting sales tax for purchases that happen in Fluvanna County.
So if you buy from your house on Google or whatever,
if you're buying from Amazon, Fluvanna sees the benefit of that.
So Amazon, yeah. So they send the county a bill.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, they had a bill. It just.
That's what I mean.
A check.
A check. Yeah.
They
quite the opposite.
They pay their sales tax.
Yeah, they pay their sales tax, and it's reflected to Fluvanna.
Okay.
And plus, also too, I think a little bit too. I think residents from the pandemic, I think they're shopping a little more locally too now than they have before. you know, maybe that's changed a little bit, but I think, you know, there's a combination of those two things that we've seen good sales tax revenue increase. Population growth, you know, 2000 to 2010, we saw 28% population growth. 2010 to 2020, we saw 6.1%. Over the last fiscal year, between 21 to 22, we saw 1%, 1% growth. So you can see the growth has moderated, you know, and as you see here too, I think the population growth is certainly reflective of permits for new homes and construction. So the top number reflects total building permits. That's new homes, that's if you put on a new deck, that's if you get a generator installed. So those are total building permits. Down below, those are permits for new home construction, and that's just for single family and single family attached and detached. These numbers do not include multifamily apartments. I can tell you in 21 or 22, there was some numbers for the Colonial Circle apartments for those building permits issued. But you can see overall from 2020, our permits for new home construction have been going down. They decreased pretty significantly from 2020 to current.
I think your 1990 to 2000 growth was in the high 30s%.
Probably, yeah.
I remember Mel telling me that we were the third fastest growing county in the state. Yep. But then all of a sudden they put a no vacancy sign up at the Lake Monticello and we were done.
We sold all the lots.
Yeah, I mean, it finally filled up.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, you could drive from Beach 5 all the way around past the golf course. Or if you got to the golf course where you saw 10 houses.
And then again, so revenue sources, again, you know, as we say, when we're looking at this, you know, are there any revenue sources to look at? You know, the only one that's really there is meals tax. Again, you know, in the General Assembly, 2, 3, 4 years back, a new local taxing authority became effective July 1, 2020. Previous to that, the board did put out a referendum in November of 2018 for meals tax. That measure failed. The new legislation that was approved included that counties may not impose a meals tax until 6 years after a referendum failed. So again, with that language, Fluvanna is prohibiting from adopting a meals tax ordinance until November of 2024. Again, the board could implement that this fiscal year if they wanted to. A conservative estimate shows that meals tax could generate, you know, roughly $350,000 to $650,000 annually, which equates to, you know, 1 to 2 cents on the real estate tax rate. That's just one. That's really the only revenue option that we see. I mean, certainly, you know, I know there's been discussion of VPOL, which I think everyone has not necessarily been in favor for. I think this is probably the only one that would probably, if the board wanted to consider, would provide any type of significant revenue. And then just the budget calendar, and again, we talked about that a little bit. I don't need to go into that. And then, again, just trying to provide a basic review today, you know, answer questions, and then collect any other comments or anything that the board would like to see before we move forward. Then after my presentation, Ms. Melton will get a little bit more of the weeds on the numbers. So any questions from the board at this point?
Nothing for me. That was really good. The only thing,
like the summary as well too. That was,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very informative. Yeah. The only thing I would eventually say to look at, I don't even know how much it was, I'm not trying to get into a big discussion about it, but if we had a full-time grant writer, if they got one grant, they pay for themselves. I mean, if they get a $100,000 grant, that position's paid for.
Yeah, the county had a grant.
We used to have one. Now I know you've been doing a remarkable job. Sooner or later, your plate's got to get full.
I mean, again, the way grants works kind of right now is every department kind of does their own grant writing, right. And then finance through Ms. McAllister. She kind of acts as kind of the go-between, and so she kind of monitors and kind of submits some stuff for some departments, but it's a lot of people doing a lot of things.
It's a lot of people with extra things on their plate that adds to them, And the only, like I said, the only thing, reason I even bring this up, guys, if we get a grants writer and they get one grant in 364 days, mm-hmm. they just pay for their position.
Well, in the way they did, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it never pays for their position.
Because
it just pays for another expense that we got on top of it. So we, let's say it costs us 70 grand a year, then they would be finding new money for other sources, but we'd still be up 70 grand a year in expenses.
Okay, we'd still be up 70 grand in expenses, but I will bring up, once again, the SCBAs. We had to replace every SCBA, logging into houses.
$1 million worth of?
1.3, if I remember correctly. I mean, imagine if we got that grant for 1.3 million. That's a whole lot of $70,000 a year.
Yeah.
But we had to pay it out of our pocket because we didn't get it.
You know, Mr. Fairchild, I do hear what you're saying. You know, grants are great. There's pros and cons. I mean, they certainly provide revenue for a lot of things that maybe, you know, the county can't fund all at one time. There are certainly some strings attached. The one thing I will say, using the example of the generator, I mean, if we didn't find the grant for that, and we think that paying $150K for a generator for that building is a good thing, well, let's just say that we had a grant writer that found that. Now, granted, we found it, and we're submitting it. Well, that should hopefully save us some money, assuming if the county gets it. But I hear you, what you're saying. They're usually a match for grants.
I think there's two points. One is, you know, grant writing is an art form in itself. So while you may be dispersing the grant writing among staff, you know, are they the most effective people to do that? That's question number one. And question number two is, not only is grant writing maybe an art form, but also the know where to look for the grants that might be available, and building those relationships is also part of the equation too. And so I seriously doubt that that's happening at any significant level. So, you know, a very effective grant writer could bring in a lot of money for the county, for all of the departments, if they're effective. You know, there's also times when they're not effective. So
I'd like to put forward a proposal. Why can't the board establish a commission or another subcommittee and use some of these very qualified people who are executive directors in their previous life and take three or four of them, put them together, have them meet for an hour or two once a month to look at opportunities, start preparing some of the groundwork on these grants, and then let the county staff, then they only have to polish up what that group has put together.
You mean a citizen group? Is that a
citizen group? Yeah. I mean, the gentleman tonight, and some of the previous ones I read, executive director of this, executive director of that. So people with executive level experience, they can probably write very good proposals. They'll need very little final work from Miss Melton or Mr. Dahl. And then that keeps them engaged doing things for the county. So why would we not leverage people who want to step forward and use them to help us out?
Kind of like a grant advisory committee or something like that?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
And it costs you nothing.
And we find these people want something for Mr. Boca to do.
Yes. Or Mr. Schoenster.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to like financials, the guy knows his stuff.
We need to look at that.
I think it's a good idea.
We could. So it sounds like a plenary committee for grants that then submits them to the department heads.
Mm-hmm.
I think one other thing that would be instructive too is to know if the surrounding counties have grant writers or something similar to what Mr. Hodge just proposed, and if so, what's been the impact of those grant writers? They might not want to share that, but
I know Greene County, I think they just recently hired a grant writer. Actually, just within the last, I think within this fiscal year, they just hired a grant writer.
Do you know why we didn't replace Pat when she left?
You know, I think it was really to kind of consolidate costs at the time, and I don't want to go into maybe some of the personality reasons.
Well, the reason I brought it up is, like I said one grant. If they get 10 grants or 12 grants or 15 grants, now we're talking about an uncanny amount of money.
And if we find out from surrounding counties, let's say that, you know, surrounding counties have, you know, 80% of them have a grant writer, and 80% of them are collecting, you know, $4 million in grants a year. And Levant County is collecting $50,000 or $100,000 in grants. I don't know what the number is. That gives us a benchmark to say we're missing the boat here, right?
And I think a projection also would show, though, like I hadn't thought about the matches. Mm-hmm. So if they got $4 million, they, let's just say they bellied up $4
million. Yeah.
So that's a...
Yeah, I mean, the, you know, matches, I mean, for example, the Historical Society's been generally very successful in getting grants. Almost all of them require matches, but yeah, it doesn't mean that we would burn down the courthouse because we didn't want to take care of it. So, you know, I think we have a little riot on our hands.
Yeah, we can take a look at a little bit of both of those questions about one, a grant advisor committee, see if there's anything out there like that, versus two, some metrics or data on localities that have grant writers and what does that produce and things like that. So we can look into some of that. And anything else?
The one thing I would say is just look up and see how we did when we had a full-time grant writer. If we could give the amount of money that we've got when we had a full-time grant writer and since. And this is no hack on anyone.
No, I mean...
You know what I'm saying.
I can think of the sheriff's office specifically. There's a lot of grant writing going on in the sheriff's office.
All right, we ready?
Yep.
You had one last thing down here. Collect other questions?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if there's any other questions or what does the board want staff to look at prior to work
session? I think that we should look at the dog tag program in the county. Because I would, the dog tag program, where we charge people $4, I would suspect that the costs of running the program are greater than what we're getting in revenue. And I would also suspect that the people who have dogs that bite people probably aren't ones that have dog tags on them and not getting rabies shots and doing what they're supposed to. So if we have a program that's costing the county money versus what's taken in revenue, and not really achieving anything other than burdening law-abiding good citizens, why are we doing it? We don't do it for cats. We don't do it for hamsters.
Wish I'd known about this, but...
I didn't know.
Andy Nauman has a dog. They create a postcard and put postage on it, send it to him every year, and the dog's not there. But that means the treasurer has to buy the dog tag in case his dog resurrected and came back. So there's a metal dog tag, administration, printing fees, postage fees, there's unlimited, and the books are littered with dead dogs.
I would agree, you either need to increase the fees or get rid of them, probably.
Yes.
Because it's probably, what we're charging is probably not...
And there should probably be a penalty if somebody doesn't comply. If there's no teeth in it, what's the incentive to do it?
Excuse the pun.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, I just can't see the use in taxing the treasurer's resources, buying the dog tags, spending the postage for a program that is only really burdening law-abiding citizens, the people that are the problem.
Never even seen it as a budget line.
It's buried in their budget.
I think we get, honestly, well, here, I can tell you what we get.
$8 for metal.
$8 for if you're they've not been neutered, $4 if they have, and if you have 50 dogs, you can buy a kennel one for $40.
A lot of localities just have a one-time fee for the license. It's not an annual.
Yeah.
So that's an option as well. You just have a one-time fee.
It was similar to like the convenience center.
You wouldn't have to put a year on it.
Correct. And the convenience center, the question was asked, why do we keep maintaining a scale that the guy that comes maintains the scale always says to us, this should be in the Library of Congress, this is an antique, you have the oldest one in the state, if not the country. And every time we have a lightning storm, we have a huge expensive cost for the scale and the measuring equipment, plus the computer blows up. So we spend large amounts of money to weigh stuff going over something. Now, when it was a landfill, yes, we generated tons of revenue from the landfill because we had commercial contractors going in there. And right now, you know, is that really generating any money? So it's just different things, you know, like dog tags, the landfill.
So the dog tags, just I did a quick look, we get about $10,000 every year in revenue for dog tags. Now, I don't know what it costs us. I'm assuming it's probably not costing.
It's so pretty close to that, and that's not even counting the time and effort they have to put in.
Going you back, you're assuming what?
It's not cost neutral.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's probably not cost neutral. I'm assuming, again, if we're only collecting 10 grand a year for it, I don't know what it costs.
It's not a money maker.
It's not a money maker.
Yeah, the auditor asked, why do you have all these spare dog tags? It's because she has to buy one for every dog she thinks is out there, even though, like, Andy Notman's dog is dead.
I lost one last year.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. Not want to be a pain, but, I mean, if we have a program, it should have teeth and serve a purpose, or we shouldn't do it at all.
We've been a little doggy about this, and maybe...
And just to go back to the convenience center, I mean, so we get about, I think we get about between receipts, we get probably about $130,000 a year from the convenience center for money that we collect off the scales, and then we get money for the recycling of metal and stuff, probably about $15,000 a year. And so, I mean, I don't remember what the convenience center budget is right now. I mean, it's not that, but I mean, you know, that's an extra $100,000 if we did not charge for that we're going to have to make up something.
Yeah. What I'm saying is it cost effective weighing them in and weighing them out versus having a flat fee?
What's the difference between a flat fee?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Just a flat fee for every time someone goes.
There's still going to be someone at the gate to see what you're bringing in.
But you cannot, I mean, I experienced it firsthand. Scale repairs, scale equipment repairs, and computer repairs. It was never ending.
It's expensive. It's an older system.
And every time you have lightning, how often do we have lightning in the summertime? A lot.
Is that way? Is there a quick way to look at what the expenses have been?
Yeah.
They looked at trying to ground.
Is there any quick way to look at what the expenses have been?
No, we can dig into that. We can see what.
You can pull it from an insurance.
Because I think. We proposed doing some fee increases previously. I think the board approved. Yeah. We did, but the board approved that. And I recall at that point we looked at. I think we gave some consideration to a flat fee, and I don't recall where that kind of ended and the pros and cons of that. But we can bring that back.
I wonder why the considerations with flat fees is if the flat fee is too high, then you just encourage people to do dumping.
Correct. Just throw it out the back woods.
Or in the river.
And that does happen.
And that has
you don't have to tell Mr. Dahl and I about it. We cleaned up how much in Columbia?
Yes.
Twice?
Yes.
An entire dumpster, 30 feet long,
yep.
About 170 bags.
Yep. Are we ready for Caleb?
Yeah. Tori.
Good.
Yeah.
Tori.
Did you have anything else?
Tori.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Eric, we talked about this, but I would bring it up before the full board, as I know it's been a matter. We talked about this, I think it was in our meeting. The vouchers, or whatever you want to call it, for volunteers, something I know Dan probably needs to look in a little. You mentioned Dan might need to look in a little bit to that. I'd like to kind of get the ball rolling on what that could possibly look like in this budget cycle. And how that can be accomplished. So don't need to have a long discussion about it tonight, but yep. I would like to see something on that.
I mean, the wage is in there with the FRA.
It's been there.
And I would support it also.
Yeah, so, but I would have to ask, and can we vote on that since we're both volunteers?
Yes.
I mean, if you benefit from it, but you're one of three or more people.
Okay.
So you're a group
so we're okay
of people that benefit
it.
From
okay.
it. So I whether understand. You do decide to do the lower rate.
Make sure
know,
we ask and
or you do it.
Yeah, I'll catch up with Mr.
The more common way of doing this is a lower rate, like 1 cent, 5 cents. That's where more localities do it that way.
But you would have to do that. So again, if you have a $5,000 car and I have a $100,000 car,
same rate.
We're going to get charged the same rate. So I'm receiving a bigger benefit than you.
Because you got that new electric Jeep.
You get that movie on.
I see where you're going with that, and I think that there's probably ways that we can make sure that it's, you know, I know there was a ton of conversations in the past that happened about, well, what, you know, what if someone's putting a car on there that is more expensive but not the one they drive to calls? I think it's just something we need to revisit and talk about, and something that we need to do. It's not a lot, it's not a ton, but it's more than nothing, and a lot of, I'm not saying...
If it would egg some of those people that go to 2 or 3% of the calls and get them up to like a 10% threshold, it would make a difference in the departments.
also, I think it's
and it might draw some people into thought
just
about
purely
it.
Principle too. I mean, it's
and when, I mean, if you look at somebody's putting 200 hours in and you're going to give them $300, that's like $1.50 an hour. It'd be illegal to pay somebody that.
Right now we're getting 33.
Why they're called volunteers? Because you're not paying them.
Yeah, but they have to spend their gas to get to the station and back.
I don't disagree with it. I'm just saying that it's
the alternative is have paid staff, and it will hurt a whole lot
more. I think we're going to find out more.
Let's let Ms. Melton before she starts getting leg cramps.
Sorry.
You're fine. I'm going to give you a brief overview of some numbers. Like Eric says, we're going to get in the weeds tonight. So this slide shows the co-ed proposed budget of $107.5 million. And this shows you with revenues where we receive most of those revenues, with 41% being our property taxes, 36% being state, and the third highest is going to be our other local tax. And then the next pie chart shows you where most of our expenditures are, with 51% of that coming from schools, and the general government operations coming in at 31%. Next slide. So this gives you, a general fund revenue summary. So this shows you in FY23 what we actually received in revenues coming in at $61.5 million. And then for FY24, this is our amended budget, what we've received so far, or what we're planning to receive at $62.4 million. And then the co-ed proposed coming in at $62.9 million. And then the 25 to 24 budget shows you an overall increase of $554,000.
And remember, this is specific to the general fund, not the overall budget.
Next slide. Our top four local revenue sources are our real estate, personal property, public service, and local sales tax. And again, it shows you what we actually received in fiscal year 23, the amended budget for FY24, and then the co-ed proposed, as well as any increase or decrease from 25 to 24. Next slide. These are revenues that we receive from the Commonwealth of Virginia. So ATRA coming in at 2.9, Compensation Board at 2.5, CSA at 2 million, Social Services 721,000, and then miscellaneous revenue coming in at 1.1, with overall state revenue of 9.4. Next slide. So this is our real estate tax with our total residential values and commercial, and then removing any non-taxable real estate, land use, and then tax relief for elderly and veterans brings us down to our revised taxable real estate. It's 3.2 for residential. I'm sorry, that is way off, 3 billion. And then commercial coming in at 122. With taxable values divided by our collection rate and then our tax rate, and you get come in at 26.7 for residential and commercial at 1 million. Getting tongue tied, sorry. Next slide. These show you our real estate tax rate comparisons from fiscal year 15 to 24. And you can see that some of these are highlighted in red and green. So red are showing you who had the lowest tax rates at that time, with green coming in at our highest.
And I think something didn't save.
I can see. Yeah, because they're supposed to be, you're supposed to see
so,
more
so
red.
So in 15, 16, Buckingham was the lowest. And then I think from 17 to, was it 23, Ms. Melton?
Yes,
Goochland was the lowest. Now Buckingham's the lowest again. But Buckingham doesn't have land use.
No. Yeah. I was going to tell you, but Goochland also has a 34-cent tax or
correct.
Something of that nature.
For the Tuckahoe Service Creek area.
Which is everything on the eastern side of the eastern half of the county. So.
But I think that was to pay for the water, wasn't it?
It was.
It's water.
It's ad valorem tax for the water area, yeah.
And then at the bottom, it just shows you the average of all of those tax rates, with fiscal year 24 being at 0.728. And Mr. O'Brien, I checked these three times for you. Next slide, please. So this is the real estate penny calculation that shows you the amount per penny this year is $377,110.
And again, you know, as we get more values and stuff from the commissioner, this number will adjust and fluctuate just a little bit, but just just for ballpark, think around 375, 380 as we go through budget season. That's the per penny amount.
Next slide. This shows you our real estate tax collection rate history, and you can see from 15 to 23, we have actual delinquent tax collection numbers in there, and then for FY24, it just shows you what we've been budgeted for at $735,000. Next slide.
Next slide.
So personal property tax, this shows you our taxable personal property values with our tax rate, so that shows you our taxable property revenues at 14.1. And then removing that PPTRA gives you our net value by our collection rate. It shows you that for FY25, it's coming in at 10.5. And then the same for business personal property, coming in at 437,000.
And these slides just kind of show you how everything's calculated, how you come up with the values, and you know, just kind of gives it an easy look to see how you come up with the revenue piece.
And this is our personal property tax rate comparison. Again, green being the highest and red showing the lowest at that time. And then your overall average coming in at 3.8 for FY24. Next slide. And this is the business personal property tax rate comparison. Lowest being in red, highest being in green. For FY24, the average was 3.61.
And I'll say a little bit about this one. This one's a little kind of hard, and it can be a little deceptive sometimes because localities have a lot of different depreciation rates that go into the tax rate. So you could have a higher tax rate, but I may have a lower depreciation rate for what I'm actually taxing stuff at. So your amounts for what you're paying for tax per locality could be exactly the same.
And some counties just have a flat rate after it's depreciated as well.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, they'll stop at 10% and you pay 10%.
Yeah, some localities will say, okay, well, we're going to, for the first 5 years, we're going to depreciate your value 20% every year. Some do it a lot different. Some depreciate it less. Fluvanna County, I think we're about 20% right off the beginning.
We start off at 80 and go down, I think, right? Well, all I know is this.
Yeah.
At 10 years, it drops off the books.
Yeah, I know we've got an aggressive depreciation schedule. So even though our rate may be higher, we did a comparison one time comparing us to Louisa, knowing the different depreciation schedules. And even though their rate was significantly lower, the tax that we paid on the same value of something was not entirely that much more for Fluvanna County.
This is our personal property nickel calculation. So that includes our personal property values, business personal property, public utilities, machinery and tools, which gives you our total value. And then revenue was generated by the 5 cent increase in tax rate, which gives you that value. And then the total amount per nickel is $172,284. Next slide. This is our collection rate for personal property, with 15 through 23 being actual numbers, and then what we budgeted for 24 at $610,000. Next slide, please.
Can you go back? I'm sorry.
Oops. Yep.
I just want to make one last note. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then too, I think in some of the budget meetings, too, with some of the board members, you know, we talked about some of the different revenues that we could potentially be a little more aggressive on, that I was being a little conservative on, namely delinquent taxes, real estate taxes, delinquent personal property taxes, interest income. Those are three that came to mind. You can see from this slide, we've done very well for 23, and looking at 24, we're also projected to do very well for revenues and those. And certainly everyone knows interest rates are a lot higher. That's a tough one. You know, I think last year we got 800,000. We're probably projecting to get another 800,000 in interest income this year. So generally we've been really conservative at only about 100,000 in interest income, just because you don't know what it's gonna do. So I actually bumped up interest income a couple hundred thousand this year. But you know, certainly with the economy, that could change. And but we're trying to recoup as much revenue you can without going off the deep end.
this is our public service corporation tax. This shows you our real estate and personal property. And this also shows you that calculation where we take our net taxable property values by the assessment to sales ratio to come up with that net taxable value. And you can see that totals public service revenue 4.1.
Yeah, there's a couple more slides.
Yep, just a couple more. This is our overall operating budget in CIP, with the red being the total county budget. So that total county budget does include the schools, and then we just show you with the blue line with the schools broken out how that compares with the county.
And the big blip in 22 for the county, the board approved $16.5 million for a county CIP project. Remember, that's just the budget piece. I mean, there's no debt issued or anything, but that's why that red number is so much larger.
Yes. And this is the overall general fund expenditure summary, with 23 having actual numbers coming in at that $52 million, and then the amended budget being at 63.9, and then the county administrator's proposed at 63.5, with an overall decrease from 25 to 24 showing up at $387,506. And then I'm here to answer any questions.
I bet you know what I'm going to ask you.
What are you going to ask?
Where are my inflation-adjusted figures?
We will provide the board with some extra charts and stuff. We have to give you a few things for your appendices that we were...
Okay.
That second to last slide, you're going to see inflation adjusted on there.
Sure.
I just want to say this. This is going back to the CIP stuff. I asked about Brush 30.
Yeah.
It is a 1998 body, so it's 27 years old. And we put it onto a chassis in 2014. So it was refurbished 11 years ago. So we may want to rethink that.
It was a what year?
It was a 1998 chassis.
I had a 27-year-old body. Your wife does too.
Look, all right, Della digressing here. But no,
Mike's like, hey, I'm over 30, you know.
You suck.
I have 5 years there, Tony.
You suck.
It's the other way. It's the longer term cab and back end.
Yes, the cab
on a newer frame.
It's on a Hummer frame. Yeah. I'm probably saying it backwards. Yeah. But the body is a 1998. Mm-hmm. So it's a 27-year-old body, and the county has $0 in that truck.
No, we paid $60,000.
Y'all reimbursed us.
Okay? Yes.
I have to check. $60,000. I'm getting burned up. But anyway. But I'm just saying it's 11 years old. Since 11 years since we refurbished it. We refurbished it thinking we'd get it back in 10 years.
So is it having any troubles? Is it having any troubles?
Electronically, yeah. Stuff like that, and that's something you don't want to have happen.
Again, we'll make sure that for the 21st, when we do CIP review, since there's a lot of big projects, we'll make sure that everyone's there to be able to answer all your questions.
And I'm going to get your information.
I wasn't prepared for Jen's spot for that. No. He knew what I was going
to
ask.
I knew what you were going to ask. I almost asked it for you.
Any other questions?
No.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bell.
Thank you, Bill. Are we?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Do we need one?
Yeah.
A work session?
Yeah, we haven't adjourned our meeting.
Who made the motion?
I did. I second.
Chair made the motion. O'Brien seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Anybody opposed? Chair votes no. Passes 4-1.